U.S. soldiers were killed by roadside bombs in Iraq. CNN reports outside of Ramadi today, two suicide car bomb attacks killed at least 13 people. 35 were wounded. 13 people, 35 were wounded. Police blame the bombings on Al-Qaeda. In Afghanistan, two U.S. soldiers were killed and two were wounded yesterday by an Afghan soldier outside of a high-security prison near Kabul. The suspect, who was shot to death by other Afghan troops, was said to be mentally ill. In France, conservative Nicolas Sarkozy won the presidential runoff election, defeating socialist candidate Ségolène Royal. He plans to make France friendlier to businesses and the U.S. Across France, nearly 600 people were arrested in riots following Sarkozy's victory. Hundreds of vehicles were torched and more than two dozen police officers were injured, according to French media reports. In Jerusalem, Israel's Prime Minister Ehud Olmert survived three no-confidence motions in the parliament today. Last week, a highly critical report was released on how he handled the war against Hezbollah last summer. A committee of World Bank directors has privately concluded that World Bank President Paul Wolfowitz was guilty of a conflict of interest involving the pay raise and promotion of his girlfriend. That's according to the New York Times. However, the confidential report did not recommend a punishment for him. An advisor to Wolfowitz will resign as the controversy continues over how Wolfowitz handled the pay package for his girlfriend. Queen Elizabeth and her husband, Prince Philip, were welcomed at the White House today. About 7,000 guests were present for her arrival. An elaborate state dinner is planned for this evening. Tomorrow, the Queen returns to Britain. In Greensburg, Kansas, a survivor was found late Sunday in the debris of the powerful tornado that struck this weekend, virtually obliterating the entire town. The violent storms killed at least 10 people. New Jersey Governor John Corzine returned to work today, a month after a major car crash that almost killed him. Officials in Cameroon say there were no survivors of the Kenya Airways crash this weekend. 110 people were aboard the plane when it went nose down into a swamp. You are listening to the Quality News Network. Business news next.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to RightCarRightPrice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to RightCarRightPrice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
The National Park Service plans to raise entrance fees at national parks over the next 3 years. However, if enough people protest the fee hikes, the park superintendents can recommend to rescind the increases. Alcoa has made an unsolicited bid to buy rival Alcan based in Canada. Alcoa offered $27 billion for the aluminum company. A Federal Reserve report finds that in March, consumers increased the amount of money they borrowed at the fastest pace in 4 months. Diet Coke, which has been on the market for 25 years, has a new formula, Diet Coke Plus, which contains vitamins and minerals. After Classic Coke and Pepsi, Diet Coke is the third best-selling soft drink in the U.S. A Las Vegas company has pulled its energy drink called Cocaine from store shelves after nationwide concerns. The company said it will sell the drink under a new name within a few weeks. The Spider-Man 3 movie, which opened this weekend, brought in $148 million in 3 days, breaking box office records, according to studio estimates. And according to the Lundberg survey, gasoline prices have reached a nationwide high of $3.07 a gallon on average. Light sweet crude is trading at $61.47 a barrel. And at the close of Wall Street today, the Dow Jones had a new record, up 48 points at 13,312, the NASDAQ up 1. There's more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Allie Dramoff.
Okay, don't you stop a man. Ripken Game. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it. So call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! All right, weekend's over, coffee break's over, back on your heads. It's 6.5 minutes after the hour. I'm Bob Kincaid, this is Head On, and we're going to be busy tonight. Sort of. Of course, we're busy every night, but there's plenty to talk about. The silence of the weekend having, I don't know about you, but mostly it just kind of makes me bounce off the wall. I despise it when talkers, people, conversationalists, some are and some aren't. For instance, Rush Limbaugh is not a conversation host because he doesn't know how can a guy who spends $4,000 on a bottle of wine and eats, hummingbird tongue canapes, how can that person interact with the everyday workaday Americans? You can't do that unless you're an everyday workaday American, because you have no idea what is important. Well, that's right. What, my friend? I understand, my friend. You can't afford gasoline. Let me tell you, the price of those raised squabs last night was absolutely mogrifying. You know what I mean? But so. I don't like it. Open line Friday. You pick it Friday. Screw it. You pick it every day. That's the nature of a conversation. You've got stuff that you're interested in that's fascinated you, grabbed you. I've got stuff that's grabbed hold of me. We're going to put it all on the table and talk. At least that's the way I think it ought to operate. This is driven by what you suggest, what you submit, what you want to talk about. And I've got two outrages, both of which, interestingly enough, came to me via email. Just, hey, Bob, I've got two outrages, and they've been vying in my head all day long for which gets top billing. And it would be easy to save the one of them for Wednesday for prayer meeting, but I don't think that's appropriate. I think we deal with it tonight, this evening, this afternoon, depending on where you are. And it's from the Washington Post. And in the immediate days after the massacre at Virginia Tech, we all asked ourselves, as we are prone to do, when we are faced with these horrors, why it happened. I, for one, am inclined to look at the prime cause: easy access to high-capacity handguns. And I got a significant amount of disagreement from others who said, no, it's the SSRIs he was on. He wouldn't have done it if he hadn't have been all drugged up. This stuff makes people crazy. This stuff makes people suicidal. This stuff makes people kill. And I disagreed with that. Because, if the guy had only had a knife, it wouldn't matter how suicidal the drugs made him. But that was the nature of the discussion. Meanwhile, the right wing was over there saying, no, he did it because of the liberals. And as far as I'm concerned, that just qualifies them to be damned and marginalized to the insane lunatic fringes of the culture forevermore, which is where they belong. But it wasn't, as it turns out, it was neither. It wasn't the guns. It wasn't the drugs. It wasn't even the liberalism, my friends. Liberals are killing America. Nope, sorry. No, in yesterday's Washington Post, a follow-up article by Amy Gardner and David Cho, no relation to Sung-Hui Cho. As disturbing a piece as I have seen show up in the news media in a while, not because of how it was written, but because of what it contained, the continuing examination of, and Agnes doesn't even know about this story because she was busy last night, the continuing examination or search for the root cause of the Virginia Tech massacre. And this is one of those sit-downers because, wow. The article simply begins, Hyungin Cho was so desperate to find help for her silent, angry son that she sought out some members of the One Mind Church in Woodbridge, Virginia. Oh, God. Now, this, you know, in a rational society, something like this might very well be the last much-deserved nail in the coffin of organized religion. Like I said, a rational society. But it won't be. To heal him of what the church's head pastor called, and I quote, demonic power. Demonic power. Page 2. And the story is full of evidence that the young man went from sick to sicker over the course of time. It documents his referral to mental health facilities and professionals. But most disturbingly, most alarmingly, it details his mother's desperate cry for help to a minister of the gospel. A preacher by the name of Lee, the Reverend Dong Chol Lee, minister of One Mind Church. He said, and I quote, his problem needed to be solved by spiritual power. That's why she came to our church, because we were helping several people like him. Those churchgoers told Hyungin Cho that her son was afflicted by demonic power and needed deliverance. My first thought is to wonder if the victims will now sue, as they should, One Mind Church, Reverend Lee, and God. Or Satan. Yeah, I mean, you know, they're really two sides of the same coin, aren't they? Yeah. This is 20... I don't know if it does to you what it did to me when I first read this. This is the 21st century. 2,100 years, or thereabouts, since the birth of Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian carpenter, whose birth carried over mythology that should have died out with Zeus and Apollo and Isis and Horus, and Zoroaster and Mithras. But myths of things like demon possession. ...2100 years of superstition and fear perpetuated in the name of Yeshua. At best, a barely literate day laborer from the backwaters of Palestine. And in his name, the best thing that a preacher who has never earned an honest day's living in his life, but has instead wandered around with his hand out waiting for the faithful, frequently referred tellingly enough as sheep, waiting for them to carry him on their backs. And he can't say, boy, the boy is sick, the boy needs to be institutionalized. He can't say, let's look at his history. He can't say, has he been hospitalized? Have they identified any mental illness? Nope! All he can say is, he is possessed by demonic power. Now, I know. What's the movie... It's in the Usual Suspects, where Verbal Kent makes the statement that the greatest trick the devil ever performed was convincing people that he did not exist, which is a great little device in the movie, but an absolute gouge your eyes out, gouge your eardrums out piece of BS. In the real and rational world. Think about it for a couple of minutes. Because a preacher said a young man was demon-possessed, that young man went back to school and eventually blew away 30 people, injuring countless more. He needed deliverance. Sure do got a purty mouth! Oh, wrong deliverance. It's stunning. It's a heck of a thing to pick up the Washington Post on a Sunday and find out that it wasn't the guns, it wasn't the drugs, it wasn't the liberals, it was the demons. Now, many of you, most of you know, and it is what it is, that we had a little appendicitis scare here. And this is West Virginia, and this is a place that is frequently pointed to and made fun of, but at least, when my lovely wife took our son for treatment, they didn't look at her and say, well, lower right quadrant pain, you know, that's where the demon Melchizedek frequently resides. Do you see what I mean? Religious superstition is poisonous and deadly. And yet, if you watched, and we did together the other night, Thursday night, if you watched the 10 little idiots at what basically was a seance that was attempting to summon Ronald Reagan back from the grave, you would have found statements such as, I believe that we are all persons of faith. We are all bound by an understanding that we owe a duty to our Creator. These are the dumbasses who believe in things like demons, who read an article in the Washington Post and go, and don't say, oh my God, demons! But instead read that article and go, there could be demons. There's probably a few demons left. You know what I blame it on? Pirates. I mean, if I've got to have a religious creed to ascribe to, I may as well go all in and go with the flying spaghetti monster. Yar! Most of the world's problems, according to the flying spaghetti monster religion, can be traced to a dearth of pirates. Yes, pirates. I mean, at least in the flying spaghetti monster afterworld, you get strippers and beer. I'm sorry. I don't want any of you to be offended. And unless you're out there and you actually believe in the existence of demons, you shouldn't be. If, however, you believe in the existence of demons, I'm going to tell you that you're an addle-pated booby. And I don't care if you're offended or not, because frankly, you're probably offended by walking under ladders, stepping on cracks in concrete, and black cats crossing your path, and you're an idiot! But that's me. I want so badly, you know, we had a little conversation about science fiction the other night. And I stand corrected. I credited the great novel Ringworld to Larry Niven and Jerry Pournelle. It was just Larry Niven, because, as I was told, Jerry Pournelle is an ass. But that's what I grew up on. Wally Schirra died the other day. 84 years old, I believe. Maybe older. One of the only astronaut to work in the Mercury, Gemini, and Apollo program, a hero of mine as a child, along with Neil Armstrong and Alan Shepard, those bold men who got on top of those stacks of dynamite and flew into space, knowing that there was a substantial risk that they would never come home, knowing that, in fact, they might never leave the atmosphere of Earth before their matter got sprayed into a million billion pieces and added back into the general mix of the universe. Those were my heroes. And the land of science was the land of adventure, in which their heroism took place. And so, as a mid-40s kind of guy, here in the first decade of the 21st century, I have to tell you, I find it depressing, angering, and maddening to note that a young man in Virginia shot up his college classmates because, in part, at least according to some, he was possessed by invisible beings of another world. Does this do the same thing to you? Does it make you just sort of run around the house screaming a little bit? I mean, this is the... Oh, he's got demons. Well, of course he has demons. We're not stupid, superstitious people like those idiots who believe disease is caused by black bile or ill humors. Of course he's got demons. Welcome to the United States of America. Welcome to a country where a presidential candidate says things like, well, people, or if people, because Mike Huckabee said, you know, I don't care if people want to believe they're descended from monkeys. It's none of my business. And we can teach it in school as long as we teach it as a theory. You know, it's just a theory. Like gravity was once a theory. Like the gas laws started out a theory. God Almighty, we're screwed. We're just screwed. I mean screwed, blued, tattooed, and dude. screwed. Global warming's just a theory. My God, my God. So that's where we find ourselves beginning this evening. It's just a theory. Now, you want to get involved with the program, you know how to do that. It's the toll-free number is 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. On your nickel, it's 304-658-5453. You're welcome to join in. This is The Horn, America's liberal voice. I'm Bob Kincaid.
The United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competency and training. UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business anytime and every time. It's their job to provide manpower. They build partnerships based on respect and trust. They provide skilled, responsible millwrights and carpenters to meet the challenge of any project because they believe and what they're doing and are so very committed to getting each and every job done right. They include a clause in your contract that eliminates work slowdown and jurisdictional disputes because they believe that, as professionals, they can discuss and solve any problem while keeping your project on target on time. We'd like to take this opportunity to thank the men and women of the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights for building the American dream and saving the American dream. Thank you.
This is the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
Yeah, my name is
This is Billy Shears. Join me every Friday at 11 on Foxed Up with John Fox. Each week, I'll feature an artist and a song with a little commentary, and we'll examine why music plays such an important role in our social and political climate. We'll try and make it fun, informative, and entertaining. That's here on the Head On Radio Network, The Horn, with John Fox, every Friday at 11 a.m. And for music and political commentary by great liberal minds, check out my website at unreportednews.net. This is Billy Shears, and hey, thanks for lending an ear.
The difference between what I do on my show and what all the right-wing types do on their shows is very simple. I'm not going to lie to you. That doesn't mean you're going to agree with me about everything or that you're going to like hearing everything I have to say, but I will guarantee you that when I say something on my show, I say it because I mean it and I believe it, and I'm not just saying it to get you riled up and to boost my ratings. No potty mouth, no trash talking, no BS, just the straight truth as I see it, because the lies may sound good for a while, but the truth is there forever. It's not always pleasant, it's not always nice, sometimes it's hard to see through all the crap, but it's there. And that's what you're going to get from me, and that's why you should listen to my show. The Cup of Joe Radio Show, Mondays and Fridays from noon to 2 Eastern Standard Time on the Head On Radio Network.
Thank you.
dirty little convert out of you. I make a dirty little religion out of loving. I'll make a dirty little convert out of you.
29 minutes before the hour. We're off to a roaring start. I'm Bob Kincaid.
They treat you like a red-headed stepchild.
And we will go straight away to the phones. We're joined by our good friend Albert calling from Wisconsin. Hey, Albert, welcome to the program.
How you doing, Bob?
You know.
Well, I'm going to go off on a tangent and whatnot.
Okay.
First of all, I would like to, you know, wish a speedy recovery to your offspring.
Well, thank you.
And I hope everything goes well. Glad you were able to get the medical attention you needed. I wanted to talk about the Iraq War supplemental off the budget bill thing, whatever.
Okay, go right ahead.
And I don't think, you know, Congress should be wasting their time worrying about trying to, you know, barter with Bush. And they should just send the same thing back to him. I mean, we talked about this before.
Yeah, it's a choice between send him the same thing back and send nothing back.
Or send nothing. And that's the bottom line.
Sorry, we'll deal with this next year, George.
Yes, they can spend it all they want. They can talk about, let's wait 3 to 4 months until, you know, we get the full 30,000 troops in there for the so-called surge, which they are way below. They're like, they only got 25% of their troops in Iraq that they really need if they want to, you know, to quell the violence. But that's besides the point. Send the same bill back to them. Make them choke on it. If he keeps on eating it, the same, just feed him the same thing every day like you're in a prison camp. And just make him eat it, and if he just keeps sending it, and then make him eat it. That's the bottom line. Got to send the same bill back, or send nothing. Like, he's either starved, he's going to eat it, or he's going to starve.
Well, I don't take issue with either one of them. The question is nerve.
Well, they should have the nerve. I mean, 70% of the American people are on board. I'm in the heartland of the North. Of Conservativeville, and it's like everybody here is pissed off, and they're like ready for it to be over. Okay, I mean that's what I see up here. So they have the support. All they got to do is, you know, utilize the component.
Well, I'm so used to being opposed to this thing that I can't fathom anybody being still hanging on to the notion that it's going to.
Well, his 28% approval rating, that's who he has hanging on, which is about 14% of the American population. You can cut that in half, because that's like registered voters, you know, and only 50% register to vote. And then, well, actually, it's 7%.
Yeah, it really, if you follow it downward, yeah, it is about
7%. Yeah, it's a quarter of that, yeah.
So and so...
Yeah, 7%.
Does that just make your eyes cross?
Pretty much.
Our nation is
close to that top 1% that's, you know, making a ton of money right now, and that Dow is looking real good. It's looking awesome, actually.
Yeah, it's looking real good.
I was invested in some of that stuff, but I don't have the conscience for that.
That was where I was going. Yeah, too much. No, too much conscience.
Yeah. Did you hear they're making a new Wall Street movie, the sequel?
No.
With Gecko. You didn't hear about that?
No.
Oh, God.
I live under...
Independent UK.
There are times I live under a rock.
Yeah, Greed is good, you know, so, you know. It's supposed to be really good, so I'm going to check it out when it comes out.
Michael Douglas signed on for it and everything?
Yeah, Michael Douglas is back again, but he said he hates seeing those drunk Wall Street types come up to him talking about, yo, man, you're a rock, you rock, you're a god.
Yeah, kind of missed the message of the movie, didn't they?
I love it. But that should be out in 2008, so I think I might buy that on DVD without even watching it first.
Just to have it as a cautionary tale.
It sums up the Bush administration, just, you know, it just sums it up. But I'm going to let you go, Bob, because I know you got other people on there, and I'm waiting to listen to them. So.
All right, I appreciate it. I really enjoy hearing from you. And, you know, when you tell me that Conservativeville has turned on this war, all I can wonder is why hasn't somebody told George?
I live in the congressional district where FDR didn't carry it, so that tells you something right there.
Yeah, sorry about the phone mix up there, too, by the way.
No problem.
we're both a little punchy here this evening, just because, and Agnes more so, because...
Yeah, I know.
Up all night at the hospital.
Up Okay. It's all good.
All right. We'll all see right. you, Andrew. Yep.
Take care.
Bye now.
Bye.
You know, Agnes is, you know, she was on the right letter, okay?
Okay, here's the warning. Agnes is not awake. She's half asleep. But I'm here because I love you all.
You know, I can tell, you know, after almost two years of doing this, I know that she's worn out and tired when she looks down at the board and just looks at it like a calf looking at a new gate, you know.
Yes, this is drug-free radio,
nah,
but it's not.
No, move.
Sleep-free radio is just never a good thing.
No. Thank you, Agnes. Onward to Susan in Oregon. Hey, Susan, thanks for calling.
Hey,
we got
Tom.
Your name right.
Yeah. There are demons.
Well, yeah.
They walk this planet.
Bush, Rove, Wolfowitz, Pearl, Rice.
37 years ago, they were named Nixon,
Kissinger,
Agnew, and they were the head of the FBI and the governor of Ohio.
Yeah.
And 37 years ago, some kids died at Kent State, and everybody said in all of the investigations, well, there was a shot fired at the soldiers, and da-da-da-da-da. Guess what? One of those students had hung a microphone out his window and recorded everything. You want to hear what he heard, what that recording comes up with?
Yeah.
An amplified version of the tape. A guard officer is also heard shouting, quote, right here, get set, point, fire, unquote. The sound of gunshots follow the word point. The student gave a copy of the tape. He was smart enough to keep the original in a safety deposit box. Gave a copy of the tape to the FBI, who promptly buried it. Let's face it, we don't want Hoover, you know, because it's come out that this was practically ordered.
Yeah.
Tricky Dicky and so on. And what's the reason I'm so, yeah, incredible about this? One of the victims found out that this tape had been donated to the Yale archives. So he got it and he played it. And nobody is paying any attention. And the reason this is relevant is because American citizens shot American citizens that day 37 years ago. And what do you think, seeing as how Bush is 100 times worse than Tricky Dicky ever thought of being, what do you think is going to happen sometime soon?
Something similar.
There's going to be blood in the streets, American blood, and it's going to be shed by American people. So perhaps we should have a nice big that congressional investigation into why this was covered up for 37 years.
Wouldn't be a bad idea to me. Of course, I'm sure there are those who would say that, you know, we have present criminal problems to deal with.
Yeah, and they look at this and they say, geez, these guys got away with it. Now, last time I looked, there's no statute of limitations on murder. I don't know if any of these dudes are still alive. But if they are, I want them tried and I want them jailed.
Well, if we can do that in Mississippi, and it is done rightly, with the people who the murderers from the civil rights era, I see no reason why we couldn't do it there.
And to do that, we need a congressional hearing. And
now Susan, one second,
bring it
please.
Out.
No, we need a Justice Department.
Yeah, and to bring it out, we need the Congress digging into it. forcing the Justice Department to look into it, because otherwise the Justice Department's not going to.
True. They're not, no, no. I mean, now, if they could find somebody selling bongs somewhere,
you got it.
The full weight of the Justice Department would be on them.
So what we need to do is call our congresspeople. I spent quite a bit of time on the phone with my congressman. I realize he does not have a position on any of the proper committees, but he talks to the people who do.
Yeah.
Call your congressman people. This isn't just something about a long, half-forgotten war. This plays forward into today.
It does. Of course, well, now there's a counterpoint to this, Susan. There is a reason why they are hell-bent on having this war and not having a draft to go along with it.
Because the campuses would explode, and they know it.
Yeah, because there's, with very few exceptions, there aren't any college kids out there who are going to put their lives on hold to go and fight for Iraqi democracy. Because, see, we've seen that movie, Susan.
Yeah, Iraqi democracy, my fat tush.
Yeah, I don't know if you noticed it or not, but there is a fellow Vice President, Tariq al-Hashimi, okay? He's mm-hmm. the, they're always number two, aren't they?
Yes.
He's the number two guy in the Iraqi government. He's the top Sunni official, and he has set a benchmark. He set a benchmark, Susan. I thought George Bush didn't want any benchmarks. He set a benchmark of May the 15th, and he says that if the Constitution is not subjected to major changes, I will tell my constituency frankly that I have made the mistake of my life when I put my endorsement to that national accord.
Exactly.
And he's going to bail.
Yeah.
How about that?
A big section of the, and this is on the blog, a big section of the Iraqi parliament has demanded that the United States forces leave their country.
And we thought they weren't going to do anything before they went on vacation.
Well, they certainly did. Now, the American people want us gone. The American soldiers don't want to be there. And now it turns out the Iraqi government, which Bush made such a big deal out of all those purple fingers getting them democratically elected, they don't want us there either.
No, ma'am.
So let's leave.
Well, so let's review. Who wants us there, Susan?
No, Bush.
Yeah.
And his cronies.
Standing alone against the entire world.
Sooner or later, though, the campuses are going to start exploding. And when they do, then there's going to be a lot of dead kids.
Well, if they do try to bring a draft, you're absolutely right. Right? Because, see, right now, this is a fascist war, okay? Because as we've noted on a number of occasions, relatively speaking, it is easy to live in a fascist state.
Yeah, just keep your head down, your mouth shut.
Right. And when you do that, then it doesn't hurt. And so nobody's asking, you know, I mean, they set up their recruiting tables, but even the recruiters know that nobody in their right mind would sign up. So you get kids that have been deluded into believing that this has something to do with patriotism, or brainwashed into believing this has something to do with honor or integrity or heroism. And they go and, you know, a certain percentage of them get splattered.
Yeah.
So it's not it, but for the most part, you know, I was up at my alma mater a few weeks ago, and walking around on a Friday afternoon on the campus, you know, class was in session. Kids were down in the student bowling alley. They were hanging out in the student union tavern. It was a beautiful, beautiful, clear blue skied day, and there was nobody out there protesting the war. There was nobody out there advocating the war. It was just another day on campus.
Yeah, because it's, you know, if you have enough money to go to college, you have enough money to stay out of the Army.
Yep.
And that's the name of that tune. Now, if you go into the ghettos, now that's not a matter entirely.
But even there, it's not like there's bonfires in the street protesting the war.
No, but I can bet you, I would be willing to bet cold hard cash that recruiters don't dare go into any inner city neighborhood in anything less than threes.
No, but they don't go into the neighborhoods and knock on doors. They set up at school and they say, son, nothing for you after graduation. We'll give you a skill. We'll give you a career. We'll give you can come out and you can have a trade.
And it's a major miracle some of them aren't getting killed on the way to their cars.
No, because they're still buying the line because it's the only, you know, Merck.
Well,
I'm
not talking about the kids.
I know, but Merck isn't out there recruiting the high schools. You know, Walmart's not out there recruiting inner city high schools or high schools in barrios or rural high schools like the ones that my poor children will have to attend.
Yeah.
But by God, the military is there every time the doors open.
Yeah. But you would think that there's going to be a point where in those ghettos, there's going to be people who have been through that ringer.
Yeah.
And they're going to look at those people in their shiny uniforms and they're heading for their schools and they're going to say, no. Not this time. And then some people are going to die.
I hope you're
wrong. This is going to start to get real ugly real fast.
If a few things come together, I tend to agree with you. I tend to disagree so long as they can manage to keep it on the back burner of the American consciousness.
Yes, that's it. They've got to keep it. And we have to keep it in the front.
And right, and remember, no pictures of caskets coming home, no photographs from funerals, no appearances by the president or any of his administration at military funerals. Only a bare mention once in a while on an isolated local newscast. I mean, the so-called professional media has been taught their lesson, Susan. It'll be a long time before anybody sits and reads the name and numbers of the dead again like they did on Nightline a couple of years ago because the right-wing media ownership told them, by God, they will not do that anymore.
Yeah. You know, I think the one thing that really got the governor of Oregon reelected was the fact that he has been to every funeral of every kid who died in that sand pit that came from Oregon.
It means something.
You can bet if you have a soldier who goes down in Iraq or Afghanistan, you can guarantee the governor of Oregon is going to show up at that funeral. And I think that got him reelected because he at least gives a rip.
Yeah. Yeah.
And every time one of those kids goes down, every flag in this state goes down.
Well, you know, that dear leader did catch up with that one. He's ordered, yeah. That's going to happen now. Did I miss that? Yeah. Half staff for the fallen. Yeah. Which
this
means
article.
That, go ahead.
Yeah, this article can be. I put it on a blog, but it's I put Cossack sent it to me, and
I got the same one.
He got an awful counterpunch.
Right.
So if you want to, you can find it either off of Counterpunch or you can go to our blog and it's up there. But it's an appalling article. Something, a 37-year cover-up? Are we going to have to wait for 37 years to find out what happened in Iraq?
We're still waiting to find out what happened to John Kennedy.
We're never going to find out what happened to John.
I know.
And I'll never forgive them for that. Never.
37 years ago.
Yeah, Kent State. And I can remember it.
37 years and 4 days.
Yeah, and I can remember it like it was yesterday.
3 days, yeah.
And it was.
And that is the sole reason there is not any form of conscription in this country during this war.
Yes. But sooner or later, that army is going to be broken past the point where they can use volunteers.
Well, if they want to...
Volunteers aren't there.
They've got, well, it's already broken. The next question is, you know, I mean, we all know that they go to sleep every night, you know, when they hang by their heels from the rafters or crawl into the crawl into the coffin with a little bit of the native soil in it. They all go to sleep every morning, I guess, praying with their fangs dripping to go to war in Iran. And the the currently accepted paradigm is that the military will do it from the air, Kosovo style. And we won't have to have any more people to do a boots on the ground thing.
That my dear departed father was fond of.
Certainly.
About them and a Kosovo style war. They would go at it like a monkey screwing a football. I'm sorry.
I've got this thing in my head now.
Yeah.
Well, that one will be hung on to. That one will get that's going to get use in future rants, monologues, whatever.
Dear old daddy used to come up with that one all the time. But they have no conception of how to do this, and I really can't see Bill Clinton coming up and saying, "Okay, guys, this is how you do it." Sure. Right. The officers that ran that war. He fired them.
Yeah.
Because they were the one that said, hey, guys, you can't do that in Iraq. You can't go into Iraq like that. You're fired.
I know.
So all of these officers that ran the Kosovo campaign are gone. The only ones left are a bunch of yes men.
And we know from Colonel Yingling's article of a week and a half ago, that the ones who are left over are really, really the leftovers.
Yeah. What's it going to take for us to impeach this guy? A nuke? Is he going to have to nuke?
Now, Susan, don't start. Impeachment is off the table.
Oh, horse pucky. It is not. Not to me. And not to millions of other people. Congress had better wise up, or they will find themselves out on their rear ends looking for a job.
I hope that's true.
And that's the message. Every time I get on the phone to my congressional delegation, same message. Impeach or you will find yourself out on the street looking for employment.
Susan, we're pals and everything, but I need you to understand, dear, that they don't believe you. They really don't.
Should look to the 2006 election then.
But see, they don't think that impeachment's that kind of thing. They think that they won. In 2006, in part because of a disagreement over the war, and in part, large part, I think most of them are willing to give this more credit than the war because of the success that they had in creating the perception of a Republican so-called culture of corruption. So if they can just keep their little heads down,
ain't gonna happen.
They think that, no, I'm not disagreeing with you, Susan.
Oh, yeah, I understand that. But boy, are these guys in for a shock.
I hope we're serious enough about it to make that so.
Because I don't necessarily have to vote for a Republican to replace these people. I can find me another Democrat.
Well, see, that's what terrifies them. I got included on this list of people who are planning to go out and hand a manifesto or list of demands or whatever to Nancy Pelosi or to her office there in San Francisco. And I just wrote back, Susan, and I said, do you have a viable candidate right now for the primary? Because that's the only thing that they're going to pay attention to. Because, well, somebody like Pelosi's district, Susan, Speaker Pelosi, for the good that she has done, and I'm not saying she hasn't, she knows that when push comes to shove in her district, given the choice between voting for her versus voting for some science-bashing, demon-believing, right-wing Republican freak, she can count on those drop-dead, die-hard liberals to vote for her every time. So it doesn't matter what we say to her about what we... You got to have a credible opponent there. So I wrote, and I said that, and I got written. It was written back to me, we'll just wait and see. We'll see how she responds to our demands.
Well, I look at...
And now, though, that list is coming around, and I'm seeing a thing about, you know, we will have a credible opponent for her in the primary. That's what are we called? The angry left? That's what the angry left has to understand. These people are incumbents. These people are entrenched. These people know. They don't believe. They know, because of the nature of the beast, that it'll take something just short of a miracle to unseat them. So if you're serious about getting after some of these people who won't support impeachment, we had best, by God, right now, find committed, liberal, progressive candidates to field against them in the primaries. The general does not matter. As they say it, tomorrow never comes.
Yeah, the primaries are where it's at, because if they lose in the primary, the general don't mean dick.
Yeah.
Yeah. If they don't make it in the primaries, well, then that's their tough luck.
But they think that the primary...
people will vote for the Democrat.
Yeah, we'll always vote, because it's not so much voting for the Democrat as voting against the Republican.
Exactly. And that's why we've already got a viable candidate to take on Smith.
Good.
Now, the thing is, the local Democratic isn't too sure about him. Tough. They're going to get him shoved down their throats, because the sheer weight of the population behind him.
Yeah.
And that's what people in the other states have to do. I can only do what my...
Right, yeah, yeah. You're only responsible for what goes on in your congressional district and in your state vis-a-vis the Senate, sure.
Yeah, and... Okay, we're getting ready to take on Smith, and God willing and the creek don't rise, we're gonna have a Democrat in that seat, which will be a nice thing. Because the only reason Smith turned against the war is because he's coming up for election, and he knows it. And he's got a whole bunch of really, really angry farmers at him.
Yeah, when they get the pitchforks and torches out, it can be ugly. Susan, we got to roll. We're at the top.
You have a real good night, and... give Bert my love and tell him he gets more fairy dust all the time.
All right, will do, Susan. Thank you.
Okay.
Bye now. All right, we got two more hours of great conversation ahead. If you want to take part in it, 877-443-2366 is the number. 877, the numeral 4, head on. Toll free, 304-658-5453. Coming up, yeah, a little outrage, too. Got the sound to prove it. You're listening to America's Liberal Voice. You're listening to The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
This is the Quality News Network. The White House warns that Americans should prepare for more U.S. casualties in Iraq as the push for security in Baghdad continues. On Sunday, roadside bombs killed 8 U.S. soldiers. April was one of the deadliest months for U.S. forces, as more than 100 were killed. Across Iraq, at least 68 people were killed or found dead today. They included 30 bullet-ridden bodies found in Baghdad, all men, all likely victims of sectarian violence. Outside of Ramadi, two suicide car bomb attacks killed at least 13 people and wounded dozens more. The Sunni city is rife with insurgents. Police blame the bombings on Al-Qaeda. A man in an Afghan uniform, soldier uniform, shot and killed two U.S. soldiers yesterday outside a high-security prison near Kabul. Other Afghan troops opened fire on the man and killed him. Authorities say he was mentally ill. In one of Tehran's central universities, a second student paper editor has been arrested for insulting Islam. Riots broke out last week at the college between fundamentalists and reformers. North Korea is ready to quickly shut down its nuclear reactor as soon as it receives funds that have been frozen in a banking dispute. Washington helped unfreeze the $25 million, but technical issues have stalled the transfer. The White House welcomed Queen Elizabeth and her husband, Prince Philip, today with a 21-gun salute and some 7,000 guests. An elaborate state dinner is planned for this evening. Tomorrow, the royal couple returns to Britain. In France, conservative Nicolas Sarkozy won the presidential runoff election, defeating socialist candidate Ségolène Royal. He's the son of immigrants. Sarkozy also plans to make France friendlier to businesses and the U.S. In Jerusalem, Israel's Prime Minister Ehud Olmert survived three no-confidence motions in the parliament today, despite last week's highly critical report on his handling of the war against Hezbollah last summer. An advisor to World Bank President Paul Wolfowitz will resign as the controversy continues over how Wolfowitz handled a pay package for his girlfriend, a bank employee. In Greensburg, Kansas, searchers found a survivor late Sunday in the debris of that powerful tornado that struck this weekend. President Bush has declared the devastated region a disaster area. This is QNN.
Monterey is the home of a new national radio voice. It's America Back on Track from the Quality News Network. Tune in weekdays at noon Pacific to this new national broadcast, a conversation with America designed to get our country back on track. America Back on Track features local and long-distance guests sharing global ideas on where we are, how we got here, where we want to go, and how we might get there. So take an hour out of your day to plug into the future, our future. Discover the solutions to the problems that have gridlocked our nation for all too long. Eschew the agenda-driven palaver of the left and the right. Tune into America Back on Track for honest talk about the important issues and how they can be resolved. America Back on Track, weekdays at noon on KRML, 1410 a.m. in the Monterey area, and streaming live online at QNNAmerica.com. America Back on Track, our ticket to a healthy and productive future.
A study on laboratory rodents has concluded that stem cells from human embryos can actually target eyes, hearts, and arteries in need of repair. The company Advanced Cell Technology announced today that it's found a revolutionary way to make blood vessel precursor cells from stem cells. The company's asked the FDA for permission to test the cells in people by late next year. The New York Times reports a counterfeit mislabeled medicine produced by a Chinese factory has killed dozens of Panamanians. The so-called glycerin was actually a chemical related to antifreeze. States across the U.S. are competing to become the home for a government research lab full of killer germs like anthrax and avian flu. The bidding has begun for the $450 million National Bio Lab that will employ some 300 workers once completed. But several states voiced fears about the safety of such a lab in their backyards. According to the Lundberg survey, gasoline prices have reached a nationwide high of $3.07 a gallon on average. That's 4 cents higher than the previous record set last year. Light sweet crude is trading at $61.47 a barrel. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrial Average was up 48, hitting a new record, 13,312. And there's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Laurel Krissen.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Six minutes past the hour, I'm Bob, and we'll go straight back to the phones. Our good friend David checks in with us from Maine. Hey, David, welcome to the program. Thanks for waiting.
Good evening, Bob.
How are you?
Did you like that drive-by truckers thing I sent you?
Oh, that was awesome.
That's cool. And you see the David Cross and the Richard Pryor and all that.
Oh, David Cross is a genius, too.
I'm guessing this is taking you a while, because with RapidShare, you have to take a... You know, it makes you wait an hour for a ticket, like you're in line.
It's a little time consuming.
I know.
A bunch of the prior links didn't work.
Oh, it didn't. Oh, another time perhaps. Yeah, I was just gonna say, people who say that rich people get off and they don't serve time or anything like that, should take a lesson with the Paris Hilton. She had an alcohol level of 0.08, and she's going to an L.A. County jail, people, for 48 days.
45,
okay.
But
we'll just pretend it's 48.
But I'm splitting Hiltons there, so.
Yeah. So, I mean, to me, we need... I know this isn't a liberal policy, but to me, we need... And a lot of people say, well... That's never going to happen, but we really do need tougher legislation when it comes to wealthy and privileged people. So there's no way they can get out. We need to get that rolling, so in the next, 20 years or so, we have a big difference. So where people go, well, if I do that, I'm going to jail for a long time.
Well, Paris Hilton proved herself a scofflaw. She proved herself, and that's the, I mean, she just thumbed her nose at the process. And, of course,
right.
She's appealing. And I still have no confidence that she'll do any jail time. Hey, David, I need to cut this short quickly. I've got an interview that was scheduled to come on. I hope we can talk in a little bit, perhaps, after the discussion.
I'll call back later.
Okay, thanks, David.
All right, later.
Bye now.
Bye.
We're joined at this time by Adam Neiman, founder and CEO of No Sweat. No Sweat Apparel. You hear the commercials here on the horn, and it's an exciting company, and a company that's in a way trying to do some of what we're doing here at the horn, and that's reinvent the business paradigm and the way you go about empowering people through business activities. Are you there, Adam?
I'm right here, Bob. How are you?
I'm great. It's so good to talk to you.
Likewise.
I got the press kit that you sent, and I was impressed before. I'm more impressed now with what you're doing with No Sweat.
Well, thank you. I'm kind of floored, actually. I have to pinch myself every morning and make sure I'm really not dreaming.
Well, how did this get started, Adam?
Oh, gee, that's a very long story. How much time do we have?
You can have the show if you need it.
By accident is one true story about it. I was driving down the road. It was rush hour, and I was trying to get back in time to get my kids to school. And I'm rushing through this four-way intersection, and so's the other, with no stop sign. There's no stop sign. The other guy is rushing through, and we slam into each other. And if the cars had been, well, a little older, okay, much older, the kind of cars that I learned how to drive on in the 70s, one or both of us would have died. And instead, the cars just crumpled up, the airbags went off, and we both walked away. No injuries, didn't even lose a whole work day. And after I got over the euphoria, I started thinking to myself, how did it take the bean counters so long to figure out that when two cars hit each other, you don't want the car to live and the customer to die? Forget about the ethics of it. Just think about it from a business perspective. I came out great. The other driver came out great. Our families were happy.
The car maker's going to sell a couple more cars because most people are insured.
Well, that's for one. And for two, of course, we went right back and bought the same car that saved our life. And...
Told your friends and neighbors.
everyone who asked us, who we knew, the first question out of their mouth was, what were you driving? You can't buy advertising like that.
No, you can't.
The insurance companies did fine because it's much cheaper to replace a car than a person. So how did it happen? If you follow the story, we remember, you know, this goes back a few years, but Ralph Nader actually did things besides help elect Republican presidents once upon a time.
Mm-hmm.
He fought for years, lobbied Congress to force the car companies to put in airbags. And the car companies fought back, and they spent millions of dollars, bought up tons of congressmen, and they won. So how did we get airbags? Well, what happened was a couple of Swedish companies, car companies, looked at the situation and thought, maybe consumers would be willing to pay a little bit extra so that they don't die when they get in a head-on collision. And sure enough, they did. And the car companies turned around on a dime and spent even more money advertising their wonderful airbags than they had previously spent buying up congressmen to prevent them from having to do it. Well, what that says to me is that behind the button-down bean button-down exteriors, these bean counters are the same randy frat boys that I remember from college. And, you know, when their parents tell them to do so, when the government tells them to do something, that's like their parents telling them. When advocates or, you know, activists or labor tells them to do something, that's like their kid brother. But the consumers or the investors, well, those are like the girls they want to date. And if they see somebody new shows up on the block that's doing something that's getting the girls they want to date, getting their attention, they'll turn backflips trying to imitate them. So I looked at that and I said, well, where else could that be applied? And I, you know, sweatshops were a big issue. It was early, you know, in 2000. And I thought, well, there you go. We'll try that.
And of course, you're located in Massachusetts, and you know, you'd seen over the course of decades countless jobs in textile manufacturing and clothing manufacture just leave.
Yeah, we've bled. I mean, we used to make most of the shoes in the country here in Massachusetts. Those are all gone. A lot of textile, a lot of that's gone. And you know, and that's just it's been brutal in some ways. In other ways, you know, our economy is doing well. It's replaced, and you know, to be, you know, I don't think that it's a terrible thing that a lot of these jobs get shared around the world. But it's a question of how they're shared. And the question of, you know, how do we prevent that from driving down the incomes and of Americans here in the United States?
Precisely, because if they're shared out to someone who, for generations, their family has been a subsistence farmer, and they've managed to survive for generations in some corner of the globe, and they go to a work in a factory setting and thinking it's going to be better and find themselves manifestly worse, maimed, killed, that kind of thing, then that sharing out of that job has been a net loss on both sides of the process.
Exactly.
But what
we want to do, I think, is, as we did here in the United States, you know, when you have a prosperous labor force, those workers start buying their own products.
Henry Ford wanted Ford workers to be able to buy a Ford automobile.
Precisely. And if you're
Adam, that model worked.
Yeah.
Why did we leave it?
Well, I think we may have forgotten why we had it in the first place. You know, part of the problem, I think, labor in some ways was the victim of its own success. Because as workers got more and more prosperous, they started thinking of themselves more and more as consumers and less as producers, and even more and more as investors. So their, you know, their sense of solidarity in some ways shifted.
Well, that I can certainly see that.
There's more to it than that.
Yeah, well, as there is with everything, that's one of the lovely things about getting to do liberal talk. I don't get away with generalities. We have to actually look into the meanings and root causes of things. We don't just get to say, "Well, it's the Mexicans."
No.
So you know, when you said it's a long story, I got time. Yeah, yeah. That's the beauty of it. It really is the beauty of what we're doing here. This is Conversation Radio, and if you want to make sure that people come away from listening to this show knowing exactly what No Sweat is about, I'd say there's a greater likelihood of that happening here than anywhere else. But with that being the case, more than, you know, you're working across boundaries, but you're working primarily with American workers, and if you read at the site, you find out that these are people who are actively involved in the production process. They're actively involved in the management of the companies, and they're producing stuff that is cost competitive. How are you? I mean, the model that we're handed from the likes of Bentonville, Arkansas, says, well, you know, you can't make a $15 polo shirt in America no more. But,
well, you can, but you can't advertise it. the big bucks, you know, you could slice the pie a few different ways. The way we slice it is we pay a living wage, we charge a competitive price, and we turn a profit, but we don't advertise.
Mm-hmm.
So we rely upon our customers to tell their friends and neighbors about us. And so far they have, enough that we're growing about, 20% some a year.
That's great. Over the course of how many years now?
Well, we're almost five now. And but the big burst we got, and this is interesting, you know, I would say about 50% of our production right now is in the U.S. and about half overseas. The big burst we got was when we brought in our sneaker from a union shop in Jakarta, and in Indonesia, and we took a spec sheet of the wages and benefits and put it right there in the shoebox. Well, that got us so much press that we started selling all over the world. And now, I mean, not only did that go up, and there are people who are saying, oh, how can you do that? You know, how can you abandon American workers? No, we're selling four times as much American product on account of the press that we got. We wouldn't have survived without that. And so we wouldn't have been helping any American workers.
So you're marketing internationally as well then?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we've got listeners in a number of foreign countries. Do they go to the same website, nosweatshop.com?
Nosweatshop.com. We ship around the world, and we also have, and you, if you look around on that site, you can get our sneakers from our distributors in the UK, Canada, and Europe.
And I have to ask, you mentioned the sneakers. Do you still have the Code Pink sneakers?
Those we're closing out. Why, would your wife like a pair?
My wife would love a pair, but we've also got a lot of Code Pink folks that listen to this program.
Well, it's a wonderful organization. They've done some very good work. You know, this has been a number of years this has been. I mean, that was the other reason I got in this, was it was, it was 2000, and I could see this Bush restoration coming up on the horizon, and I really didn't want to be sitting it out just grinding my teeth.
Well, has it been as bad as you thought it would be? Worse?
It's actually, I thought it was going to be very bad, but I didn't think it was going to be quite this bad.
Because I don't know how these moderates, these middle of the roaders, whatever the media likes to call them, the undecided voters, I've never met one. And I don't know how there can be any middle of the road left in America anymore because of where we are in terms of what's happened to workers, what's happened to pensions, what's happened to benefits, what's happened to health care. And all of those things are things that you, Adam, have addressed inside of No Sweat. The folks that make this apparel in the United States, they're union workers, aren't they?
Every single one of them, both in the U.S. and outside.
Well, that's true, too, yeah.
What I see on a couple of fronts, you know, first of all, if we support with our dollars organized labor in the developing world, those wages and benefits are going to rise, just the same as they did here in the United States. And that's going to help American workers right there, because then these countries will, one, be able to buy more of our products, and two, we'll be more cost competitive with them. And three, most important, is that it builds democratic societies. You've never seen a democratic society anywhere, modern democratic capitalism, without a strong labor movement. Nowhere. And if we would stop, and it's just so crazy. I mean, we send our young men and women off to defend democracy with their lives, and then we send our dollars to despots.
Well, that's true. And if you Adam, if you think about it, God knows it hasn't been reported by our so-called professional media. If you take a look at Iraq, one of the first things that the Coalition Provisional Authority did, and the subsequent wholly owned subsidiary government, is to crack down on Iraqi trade unions.
Yep.
And, of course, the last friend that we have in South America is in Colombia, and the life expectancy of a union organizer down there isn't good.
Yeah. No. And it is such a wrong-headed, wrong appraisal of what it was that made this country strong. It's complete failure to recognize the important role that trade unions played during the Cold War. Not just Poland, but
no.
Obviously in Poland. But, these guys are still kind of operating under this notion that independent trade unions are a bunch of commies. And that's just not so. I mean, there's never been any, nobody has jailed and killed and suppressed more trade unionists than the communist countries. So we don't have any trade unions are not socialists.
No, these are people who want to live the American dream or whatever the dream is in the given country. They want a better life. Mm-hmm. And by virtue of participating in a trade union, they learn that, that's not the very nature of a union local a micro model for macro democracy on a national scale.
Absolutely, and in a capitalist democracy, if you're not represented at the table, you're not going to get your share. And if business interests have a lobby, working people have to have a strong lobby, or their interests are not going to be met.
Why is America having such a hard time understanding that the highest employment, the highest productivity, for the most part, this country ever had, and coincided with the highest union membership during the Eisenhower administration, and yet now it's a struggle. I mean, I'm sure you're well familiar with the Employee Free Choice Act, passed fairly resoundingly in the House, but it's going to have a struggle through the Senate, and it's a sure veto when it gets to George Bush's desk. Why are the American people, do you think, Adam, so either filled with antipathy or apathy or ignorance about something that seems so fundamentally necessary?
It's a good question. I think it's a number of things. I mean, part of it is that we've forgotten where all this wealth came from and how it happened. That's part of it. And there's also, there are also competing myths about how it happened. There's on the one hand, and there's enough truth to both these myths to hang a myth on, but there's this, the story, the true story is a little, it's more prosaic, and it's in my opinion, it's more interesting. The myth is, on the one hand, you've got the Henry Ford titan of industry who creates all this wealth out of his own head and his hard work and is being dragged down by, you know, labor, you know, these parasitic labor leaders and government bureaucrats. That's one myth of where all the money came from. Then you've got a competing myth, you know, which is that this was wrenched from the hands of the greedy capitalists by these brave labor leaders. And there's truth to that story. And there's truth to the Henry Ford story. But what happened most of all was that moderate labor leaders and businessmen operating out of enlightened self-interest made common cause back in the progressive era. And, you know, these businessmen had looked at some of the newest management studies, and these studies by Frederick Turner in the 19th century. And these studies showed, they particularly focused on the garment industry, that workers who worked at a reasonable hours with regular breaks in a well-lit, well-organized factory, who had at least one day off, who worked an eight-hour week, and were reasonably well paid for it, that these workers were so much more productive than workers who were working sweatshop hours in sweatshop conditions, that both the quality and the productivity were so much greater that management could actually afford to pay a good wage and even make more money doing so. So this is a little piece of history. I learned this, you know, little thing back in college, you know, one of those things that you don't think is ever going to be much use to you.
Yeah.
You know, all those little bits of information. But
I got a million of them.
When the sweatshop issue came around again, I remembered how we had done this before. And I figured, hey, anything that works once could work twice.
Well, where did you come to this from, Adam?
Well, you mean what was I doing before I went into the schmata business and rag trade?
Right.
I was a roofing contractor. And I found, you know, that it was, you know, my family is, you know, by and large kind of academic politicos. We come from as far left as you get in the Democratic Party and still be in it to win it.
Mm-hmm.
And I could go on about some of the things some of the folks my family have done. I'm very proud of them. But I didn't grow up thinking of business as being a fundamentally ethical proposition. But when what I found in the roofing business, which is, you know, total, I can't come right now, darling. Sorry, I got a call for dinner, but I'm not going to take it yet.
We'll try not to let it get too cold.
No, thank you. I appreciate that. We can come back if you want to.
Absolutely.
You know, what I found in business was I found that if I treated my workers the way I would want to be treated, and if I treated my customers the way they wanted to be treated, everybody wanted to come back and do business the next day. Duh.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I kind of wanted to see, I mean, that was, I guess, one of the seeds to this other business. I was curious if that could have a broader application. And this was a chance to see. And so far, I would say, yeah.
How many people are working making No Sweat Apparel?
Oh, geez. Exclusively? I mean, what we do, by the way, is, we don't own factories.
I'm in the middle of something. It's an interview.
Pardon me.
No, that's okay. I understand.
It's 7 o'clock here on the East Coast.
Well, I'm on the East Coast, too. My wife is my producer. Believe me, I understand.
Well, this is nice. This is family radio.
It is. We really are trying to do things differently here, and that's why I feel a certain amount of empathy with what you've got going on there at No Sweat. But suffice to say, you're providing work for a lot of American workers who are making a decent wage making your product.
Well, we're helping keep a couple of factories alive. That's true. And here in the U.S. and in Jakarta and in Bethlehem, Palestine.
Now, I wanted to get to that. Before we do part company this evening, I want to know the Palestine story. I said before we do wind this up tonight, I must know the Palestine story.
Well, it's the wildest thing I've ever seen, Bob. We just rolled out a line of organic T-shirts from a Palestinian-owned, unionized factory in Bethlehem. And we've got the active support of both the Israeli and the Palestinian foreign ministries. And, we're selling wholesale T-shirts to Jewish, Muslim, and Christian schools and camps. You know, we know all the sublime things that these three great religions have in common, but there's one very banal thing they also have in common.
They got to wear clothes.
They buy prodigious quantities of T-shirts for their schools and their camps. And there's this little piece of common ground here. Namely, everybody agrees on all sides of this conflict that more good jobs for Palestinians in Palestine right now will help. And if there's one thing, if you're in a spot like that and there's just one thing everybody agrees on, well, you do that one thing. And, I've never seen anything like it. But is it raising my sales of U.S. products? Absolutely. And I couldn't do.
Well, you can market it. You can market it to Muslims, Christians, and Jews, and you can market it as a legitimate step in the peace process. You reduce desperation, and you reduce the need for bloody outrage.
Well, that's right. I mean, it's not a substitute for a diplomatic solution. But there's a big economic component to the problem. And whenever you have young men with guns and no jobs, I don't care whether it's in Palestine or South Central Los Angeles or Northern Ireland, that's a recipe for violence. And, what we need is to, start generating some goodwill, start generating some real jobs.
So these T-shirts are available at the website?
They are. They're at nosweatshop.com right this minute.
Are they marked as such?
They are.
Okay. And again, it's all organic and fair trade cotton too, right?
Mm. The cotton is not fair trade. It's only organic right now.
Oh, okay. Okay.
If I had gone with a fair trade organic, I would have priced it out of reach by anybody except, a small number of upper middle class consumers. And to me, I would rather have something that was good that everybody could be a part of than something that was perfect that only a tiny handful could have a part of. I didn't get in this just to, assuage the guilt of upper middle class consumers. That was not the point of the exercise.
Sure. But you have
much more interested in solidarity than I am in guilt.
Well, since the Intifada of 2000, some 25,000 textile jobs have been lost in the Palestinian territories. How could desperation help but set in under circumstances like that? So you are taking a bite out of it, Adam. Now, being word of mouth and being internet-based, I would assume that customer service is a huge component of what you do. Is that right?
Oh, my staff is just amazing. I mean, what these guys do, it's mind-boggling. And then, of course, when we get into Christmas rush, we all do. But our turnaround is generally 2 days from order to ship.
And now, the with all this being union-made clothing, what is your rate of reject?
Very low. you know, it's comparable with the rest of the industry or better.
And as far as
quality, you know, of course, a quality job is going to create a better quality product.
Sure, exactly. And as far as people getting your stuff, they order it. You know, the turnaround is quicker. They've saved the price of the gasoline driving to whatever store it is they're going to buy it in. You've got a model that's working. Are you getting responses in the business community as well? Are they looking up and saying, you know, gee, you know, Adam's got his finger on the pulse?
Yeah, actually, there has been a shift in the industry since we got into this. And we've inspired a few big competitors, too. No one has yet really embraced the union label part. I mean, that doesn't surprise me. I figured we'd stake out a position on the last frontier of corporate social responsibility and wait for everybody else to come around. Meanwhile, we'll just grind away at the market share.
Well, yeah, and grind away and succeed. Last question before you head for supper. Where are you going? What's next? What's coming? What's new? A lot of folks that listen to these programs are familiar with No Sweat because they've been to the website several times, and we encourage them to buy there as opposed to elsewhere on a frequent basis. This is mostly casual stuff. Where does the line expand?
Well, I see ultimately No Sweat as being a sort of an umbrella brand, with sub-brands underneath it that are geared towards particular markets. So we, you know, two customers that or two, you know, we have a very wide spread of customers. We've got, you know, 15-year-old punk rockers in London who tattoo the brand name on the back of their necks. I kid you not. And we have, you know, 50-year-old union electricians in Arkansas passing out material about us at their, at their union hall. So then we got nurses and teachers and, you know, you name it. So it's a really wide, wide spread of appeal. So I see two lines coming up. One is to the yoga market.
Mm-hmm.
I know a lot of Code Pink members are part of that market. We want yoga wear, which we'll produce in Bethlehem, because yoga is all about strength and serenity and suppleness, and those are real qualities. And flexibility, and those are real qualities that are needed there in, you know, with Israel and Palestine if we're going to ever get out of this mess. So I see that coming down the pike. That's next spring. I want to do a line out of the U.S. Another big group that likes what we do are the construction trades. So, and that's a really funny pairing, you know what I mean? I mean, you know, to have these burly construction workers on the one hand, and then these live yogis on the other, well, that's kind of fun.
That is indeed.
It just, you know, so we go for that. There's a streetwear line that's in the works for next year. You know, we've got... these young indie rockers and punk rockers are very big on what we're doing, especially from Palestine. But, you know, not just from Palestine. Well, we're doing from everywhere.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's what's so wild about this. I mean, not only do we have the Jews and the Christians and the Muslims, but we've got the anarcho-atheist hordes. I said that to my mother the other day, and she said, "Don't talk like that. You sound just like that Don Imus." And I said, "No, no, Mom." I said, "Hordes.
Hordes
with a D."
Yeah. And an E and an S, Mom. Yeah. Adam, this has been a joy. And again, I want us to talk some more. And frankly, I'd love to,
about all kinds of things, because it's an interesting world out there.
It is indeed, and that's sort of what we try to point out here. You know, we started out with a 3-hour program, and we're at 11 hours a day now, and probably expanding by two or three more before the summer's out. Our goal is in another year to be offering 24 hours of programming 7 days a week.
Well, that's excellent, Bob. I'll tell you, one of my goals is to get to the day where I could actually start buying advertising to support some of the very good work that people like yourself are doing out there. So far, you mentioned that you don't do commercials for us, but I'd like to thank you very much and make sure that your listeners know you hadn't gotten a penny from us yet.
That's okay.
Well, I appreciate that, but someday I hope I will remember you.
And I believe that's how it works, Adam, because in our email exchange, you used a phrase that you said was not your own, but I've taken it to heart. Building not a vicious cycle, but a virtuous cycle, and I think that's kind of the track that you're headed down, and we're headed down as well.
As they say in the Middle East, inshallah, God willing.
Indeed, indeed.
Be well.
And you as well, Adam Neiman. Take care.
Thank you, Bob.
Bye now. Shalom. 18 minutes before the hour, that was Adam Neiman, CEO and founder of No Sweat Apparel. Is that exciting or what? Oh, God, I turned into Rachel Ray.
Don't.
And next we'll have some EDO. Oh, is that great or what? Sorry. Now, it is exciting. It's exciting to see business operating as something other than a mercenary act. And doing so for reasons that are not just humanitarian or moral, but based on good business sense. No Sweat will succeed. The Horn will succeed. Because we are creating a means of succeeding that stands out from other methods. Methods that are, by and large, brutal. Many of you listen to our very good friend Mike Malloy, and he's said on a number of occasions, radio is a wonderful job and a rotten business. We're out to change that. We're out to make that markedly different. That's why we talk about what we're doing here as being a family effort. It's not just Agnes and me and our family. It is the family that you all have become to us, and I hope to each other. You're listening to America's Liberal Voice, a new way of talking. You're listening to The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to The Horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Recently on the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network.
If
you have tuned into this program by mistake right now, and you are a Republican, a right-wing Republican specifically, before this program is over, I do want to warn you, you're going to think that I'm the devil. You're going to think I've got horns and a red cape because I hate the Bush administration and everything they stand for. So be warned right away, okay? You're all warned right now that that's where we're coming from today.
Don't miss Guy James weekdays, 3 to 5 Eastern Time on the Head On Radio Network.
I never thought my daughter and I would ever think the same thing is cool.
At home, my boys are like a wrecking ball. But when they volunteer, they're actually shaping things up.
Hey, they plant a tree at the local park. Clean the place up.
She makes new friends. She has a great time.
My son loves it. He's contributing.
These are nice kids.
The Are You Into It volunteer program is a great way for you and your kids to make a difference in the community while making friends. So, if you're into it, or you think your kid might be, call 4-H toll-free at 1-888-77-YOUTH. Or visit our website at www.areyouintoit.com.
We can't get him to clean his room, but he loves volunteering.
A public service message brought to you by 4-H, the Cooperative Extension System, and the Ad Council.
Minutes before the hour. It really is kind of what it's about, isn't it? Now, by the way, I know a lot of you, because I've gotten your smart alecky little emails and so forth, very tongue-in-cheek, very well-intended, and you're convinced that I don't own any pants. I know you're ready for some for us to replace that ad, and we will. I'm going to work on that. It's going up high on the list. Well, I'd like to do two or three ads for No Sweat that we could rotate and you might not get so tired of so quickly. I think Adam should be part of those ads, don't you? Adam himself talking about why to do it. If you were wondering if you had a good reason to buy those products, I hope there's no question any longer. I hope it's abundantly clear to you that you have a darn good reason. And I love the cross section of the population that's jumping on the bandwagon. I have got to have one of those organic tees. Pink tennis shoes. And Agnes has got to have some pink tennis shoes. She may be the only code pinker in Fayette County, West Virginia. I don't know, but we'll sure find out the minute that she gets them on her feet, won't we? And something just a reminder that I was asked to pass along by our very good friends at Coal River Mountain Watch. As you know, across Appalachia right now, even as we speak, lives and jobs, home space, habitat, wildlife, mountain cultures are all, not just at risk, but at the brink of utter extinction as a result of coal mining. And it's the coal that's mined because we don't have a will to learn how to generate electricity from other sources, and because we don't use what we have wisely. Well, right now, across the country, folks and you know this from listening to the programs on the horn. This is what we're about. People are getting responsible, taking responsibility, taking action to end mountaintop removal coal mining. or mountaintop removal, coal removal. I don't think it's fair to call blowing up a mountain and scraping off the coal mining. And they're looking for energy solutions, people are. Well, the reason I'm mentioning all of this is between May the 20th and May the 27th. From anywhere, if you can get here, get here. You will, I swear, I promise, be welcome. Young or old, short or tall, you know the drill. From May the 20th to May the 27th, there's going to be a week of skill sharing, camping, and the kickoff of Mountain Justice Summer 3. Why not join the movement? You know, it may be Appalachia's mountains, but it's your future. And if you're interested, you can go to mountainjusticesummer.org to register, get signed up, and get more details. mountainjusticesummer.org, just like it sounds. Go and have a look. Make the hit counter spin a little bit. Let them know that all across this country, people are paying attention. And that change is coming and help is on the way. Let's go back and resume our conversation with our good buddy David in Maine. Hey, David, sorry you had to wait.
That's no problem. I caught the tail end of that. That was pretty interesting. That guy's the founder?
Yeah.
That's interesting. I was always wondering what those ads were, if they were just an advocacy group or something like that.
No, this is we wouldn't be running it if it was just another thing.
Well, he sounds like a really well put together DIY type of guy.
Yeah, I mean, you go from roofing contracting to the manufacture of clothing. I'd say that's a Renaissance man kind of mind there.
Well, like I said, it's really interesting. I have a few other things that I was going to mention.
Yeah, go ahead.
First thing was in Los Angeles, a man was killed by an explosive device on top of his car. Now, wouldn't that be an IED?
One would think.
Yeah, but they treat it as a homicide. Again, these little things, they add up after a while. Terrorism's always been here. And
sure it has. This nation,
with the mafia and with thugs and with everyone.
Well, back up even further, David. This nation was born out of terrorism. What do you think they called the American revolutionaries? What do you think they called Ethan Allen and the Green Mountain Boys?
I tend to agree with you on that. And that brings me to the other subject. I don't know if you caught it, but I sent you on this guy named Pat Dollard. And I thought what was interesting about him was he's an extremist right-wing Hollywood agent. How's that for a combination? And he sold all his possessions to go fight the war in Iraq. And as I was watching the videos, and I think everybody should go to patdollard.com to look at it, D-O-L-L-A-R-D. And the reason why I want people to look at it, at patdollard.com, the reason why I want people to look at it is I want you to see an example of what I consider a xenophobic virus. Somebody so obsessed with any kind of outrage or any kind of militancy or uprising that is going on in any country that doesn't resemble what they see in their mind as a democracy. And you see this guy who was literally, in his own words, a millionaire. He was the agent for Steven Soderbergh. This is a hell of a story, okay?
Okay.
And the thing that makes it interesting to me is he actually got bombed. He got bombed on when he was in his armored Humvee. He's experienced it. So, you know, with that said, I respect the guy for putting his money where his mouth is to do this documentary that he wants to do, and he's like, I'm going to roll with the soldiers. I'm going to do it. But on the other side of the fence, I don't respect the guy for spreading hatred just because someone is an Arab and just because someone there's an uprising that's happening or they're experiencing some instability. That happens all the time. And to me, it's just funny when, if this was Israel, they would be saying, it's a righteous liberation or whatever. They're claiming their land for whatever. But when it comes to Arabs and something like that, there's this stigma. And I think it does result in a lot of, I don't think you're born with it. I think it grows with you like a tumor. With like Michael Savage and these types of people, they embed it in your head. And I think what's happened, I'd be willing to guess, Bob, that he is a Michael Savage listener. Because in the videos, you hear him and he starts talking about how the liberal media, and there's a video where he's on Hannity and Combs and he's talking about how Hollywood is so biased, and it's just these little codes and frameworks. And you know, every society and community that you go in, you're going to experience whatever the culture reflects. But to demonize someone or to put someone just black or white, it really doesn't help you, and it doesn't help the situation at all.
Well, I got a really, really icky.
I know it's kind of psychotic, and
I learned the joys of killing.
Yeah, you know, he's like, you know what? He's like the anti Michael Moore. The thing that I find interesting is that a lot of people, he's having a hard time making this movie. He's lost a lot of money.
Good.
Again, you're talking about a guy who was a talent agent. To see
lose more, because he's on the wrong side here.
Oh, exactly. I think there's a problem. You know, there's also
he's selling
problem.
A T-shirt that says "Jihadi Killer."
Exactly. The problem I have with somebody like that who's in the company, if we're going to go the route of we can't have reporters near the soldiers and all of that, well, then I have to say this: you can't have these type of shock journalists riding along with the soldiers, encouraging people to do psychotic and to act really outrageous and do sickening behavior just for a film.
Well, you know, I'm scrolling down as we're talking, David,
right.
And there's a story that I hadn't covered, not for any lack of, it certainly wasn't censoring the story, just hadn't gotten to it. But it's true that American troops found a school under construction. Did you hear about this, or did you see it? It was a Baghdad girls' school, and it had been built with explosives in the walls, explosives in the floors. Every structural aspect of this school that was going up had a bomb in it. And the minute that it went live, so we are told, they were going to blow this thing to kingdom come.
Mm.
Now, on the one hand, Dollard is spinning this as, you know, they're not telling the good news about Iraq. Look what we found and prevented. Good. I'm glad it was prevented. Guess what? For every one we found, there's 10 we haven't.
Don't these people understand the madness of when you add poverty and violence together? Doesn't that...
Well, don't they understand that the poverty breeds the violence? What the hell else do you have left?
Right. And you know... Come to think of it,
But David, this guy's saying, "Wow, you know, the mainstream media is not giving the good news."
Right,
guess
right.
Where the story I read came from?
You know what's scary?
CNN.
You know what's scary? You read some of those comments on those pages, and you're looking at some KKK stuff. And again, I point this back to when you have someone like Savage on the radio who isn't held accountable to hate standards. And hate crime standards, because I'm guessing that a lot of people who listen to his radio, there's probably a few killings there who were inspired American History X styles to beat up on some black people or to beat up on some queer people. Just because Michael Savage is outraged and he's letting his screaming out on the radio what he hates about people, and I just think there's a definite...
No, but there's, David, there's really, honest to God, more to it than that. Because I don't go to sleep at night wondering if I've inspired somebody to go blow away a fundy, because I don't advocate blowing away anybody, okay?
Right.
Michael Savage, the Savage Wiener, advocates killing other people. Whether it's, he wants to nuke the Palestinian territories, he wants to nuke Baghdad, he wants to nuke Tehran. You know, it shows the small, the hobbling, what is it, what's that phrase, the hobgoblins of small minds, or small
right,
minds, or
right.
Something, or a hobgoblin, I don't remember. But he's a hobgoblin, okay?
Right.
And it, every show is a variation on a theme of somebody needs to die to make America a better place.
And you know, Bob, one of these days, Michael Savage is going to get exactly what's going to happen to Imus. There's going to be a level of outrage that's going to just blow the doors open. And Michael Savage is going to get thrown off the air.
No, he's not.
Yes, he will. He'll get thrown off the air. He's gotten thrown off the air before, Bob.
Well, he's gotten bounced from one station to another, but he always finds another station to pick him up because that shtick sells. Okay, you've got, again, you can't just listen to the programming. This is old school bad paradigm radio. You have to listen to the commercials too. And you have to understand that, that as long as Michael Savage goes on the air and says, "I tell you, you need to drown some babies before you bath every day. It'll make America stronger." If he does that, there are advertisers out there like the current, you know, "Buy gold now." And you know what? They're aiming at the people who listen to him because they know they're dumb enough to buy the product. All right? Patent baldness remedies, herbal erection remedies, Swedish mattresses, vacuum cleaners that'll pick up a bowling ball. All of this stuff is marketed to the people who listen to Limbaugh and Savage and Hannity and O'Reilly and Beck and all these other godforsaken freaks because it's all P.T. Barnum. It's all wrestling. It's all show business. That's, you know, that's what I hate about, well, never mind. I won't mention any particular topics, but it reduces, there are ways to deliberately reduce the dialogue away from serious discussion and away from serious consideration of solutions. And every night, that's what that crowd does. They take complex solutions, they reduce it to the simple. Ah, it's all the Palestinians' fault. They're a bunch of vermin. They're dogs.
Right.
Boom. Without bothering with any of the complexities of the circumstance. On this Dollard site, David, I'm looking here.
Yeah.
There's a picture of little Muslim schoolgirls with their little hijabs on their little heads. And they're charming and beautiful and a beautiful little girl. Okay? Underneath that is the picture of the Muslim father with his turban on his head, picking up the lifeless, blown-apart body of his baby girl, okay?
Yeah.
And, okay, that is meant to conflate the bombs built into the school with that man. But the thing, see, that's a big lie, David, because I remember when that story happened. I remember where that story came from. That is a man picking up his blown-apart daughter from the rubble of an American explosion. That little girl is what we politely refer to on the cocktail party circuit in between the Cabernet and the bacon-wrapped scallops as collateral damage.
Oh, I was just going to say that. I agree with you. I think there's, I mean, again, there's
these bastards are liars, David.
Yeah. There's somebody who really hates themselves, and they need to find something else to hate so they can confront with the hatred inside themselves. And I just think, you know, with somebody like that, it just really, it's not healthy, and it's amazing that this guy gave up so much money just to do that, and he's not happy with himself. I mean, go figure.
Well, now, bear in mind, he gave up all of that thinking he was going to make a million times more because
he formed
this idea back when the idiot with the kerchief was standing with the sign saying, "Get a life, you morons."
That's true.
And when they were burning Dixie Chicks discs.
That's true. The other thing I wanted to mention before I sign off for the night was, did you catch the Lou Dobbs 60 Minutes piece?
No, I did not. We were kind of tied up last
night. I found that interesting. Leslie Stahl actually picked a relevant piece that was interesting. One of the reporters on the Lou Dobbs show, and this will give you an example of the Lou Dobbs dimension we're entering right now. She said that she found a piece where they said Mexican immigrants in the last 3 years, 7,000 of them have had, or 3,000 of them have had leprosy. But here's the thing. They got the whole thing wrong, Bob. It's 30 years, and she confronted him. She said, "You got the fact wrong that Mexicans were coming in to America and they had leprosy. It was 30 years, not 3 years." You know what his answer was? I kid you not. This was his answers. "The facts according to whom?" And he sat back and he had that smug look on his face and he's like, what facts? And see, again, that's what we're dealing with. The facts according to whom? If someone gets something wrong and you hold somebody accountability, you know, it's that you're living in that reality base. You know how people say Lou Dobbs is a hero? No, he's not.
No, of course not.
He's just representing an angle. You know what it is? It's also insecurity where he comes from, too. Because, you know, he is from Idaho, and he wants to show people that he can be the big man on campus.
Well, it's the Tim Russert Buffalo reference syndrome all over.
What America wants, it's not what America needs. We need leadership that's strong and that shows America what we can do
to
lead
the
world. Ronald Reagan was a president of strength. His philosophy was a philosophy of strength.
Okay,
a strong
military,
a strong economy,
stand this.
And strong families. With regards to Iraq, there are a lot of people that say, let's just get out. I want to get our troops home as soon as I possibly can. But at the same time, I recognize we don't want to bring them out in such a precipitous way that we cause a circumstance.
Financial. And now, in order to afford this wee little fellow, this sweet, precious little fellow, the memorial that he richly deserves, the family is going to need some help. The details are up at headonradionetwork.com. Go and look. I won't try to say what went through me when I got the note from our good friend David in South Carolina. But we've all been following Jacob's story and Jacob's case for a while now, and I just felt like something empty had gone out of me, and I thought you all would want to know, because I don't kid, and this isn't a marketing ploy when I say that we're building a family here of our own choosing. We are. And I am touched by this, and I know that you are as well, and I know that if you can help, that you will. We're always asking for something. I can't think of anything more worthy to ask you to help on than this, please. And someday when maybe the wound has healed a little bit, I don't know, perhaps David can tell you a little bit about their journey, their trials, their ordeals, and what they faced just trying to keep Jacob on planet Earth for a couple of years in a brutal state like South Carolina. We'll be back after the news. This is The Horn.
The man in 119 takes his tea all alone.
This is the Quality News Network. Residents in the small community of Greensburg, Kansas, say the death toll from Friday's tornado would have been much worse if not for a 20-minute warning siren. That gave many time to scurry to basement shelters. About 95% of the town is in rubble from the twister's 205-mile-an-hour winds. Searchers found a survivor late Sunday in the debris. At least 12 people are dead. President Bush declared the devastated region a disaster area on Sunday, freeing up federal aid money. The White House warns that Americans should prepare for more U.S. casualties in Iraq as the push for security in Baghdad continues. On Sunday, roadside bombs killed 8 U.S. soldiers. April was one of the deadliest months for U.S. forces, as more than 100 were killed. Across Iraq, at least 68 people were killed or found dead today. They included 38 bullet-ridden bodies found in Baghdad, all men, all likely victims of sectarian violence. Outside of Ramadi, two suicide car bombs attacks killed at least 13 people and wounded dozens more. Police blamed the bombings on Al-Qaeda. In one of Tehran's central universities, a second student paper editor has been arrested for insulting Islam. Riots broke out last week at the college between fundamentalists and reformers. North Korea is ready to quickly shut down its nuclear reactor as soon as it receives funds that have been frozen in a banking dispute. Washington helped unfreeze the $25 million, but technical issues have stalled the transfer. The White House welcomed Queen Elizabeth and her husband, Prince Philip, today with a 21-gun salute and some 7,000 guests. An elaborate state dinner is planned for this evening. In France, conservative Nicolas Sarkozy won the presidential runoff election, defeating socialist candidate Ségolène Royal. He is the son of immigrants. Sarkozy also plans to make France friendlier to businesses and the U.S. And in Jerusalem, Israel's Prime Minister Ehud Olmert survived 3 no-confidence motions in the parliament today. That despite last week's highly critical report on his handling of the war against Hezbollah last summer. An advisor to World Bank President Paul Wolfowitz resigned today as the controversy continues over how Wolfowitz handled a pay package for his girlfriend, a bank employee. This is QNN.
It's not hard to find people in need. They're everywhere. And there's more than one kind of disaster that affects people's lives. There's AIDS and the millions of orphans the disease has left behind. There are teeming refugee camps, the result of war and persecution. Mary Knoll has been reaching out to the world's needy for nearly a century. Mary Knoll is there right now, in 40 countries around the world. And with your help, Mary Knoll will be there tomorrow. Call us at 877-MARY-KNOLL. That's 877-MARYKNOLL. And for more information, go to www.mygiftcounts.org. One world, one mission. Mary Knoll.
An Israeli archaeologist has discovered the ancient tomb of King Herod. The ruler of the Holy Land around 74 BC was a renowned builder and historic figure. The Hebrew University had hoped to announce the finding tomorrow, but a newspaper got wind of the story and printed it. Advanced Cell Technology announced today that it has found a revolutionary way to make blood vessel precursor cells from stem cells. A study on laboratory rodents showed that stem cells from human embryos can target eyes, hearts, and arteries that are in need of repair. The companies asked the FDA for permission to test the cells in people by late next year. States across the U.S. are bidding to become the home for a government research lab that will deal with killer germs like anthrax and avian flu. The $450 million National Bio Lab will employ some 300 workers, but several states have voiced fears about the safety of such a lab in their backyard. Alcoa has made an unsolicited bid to buy rival Alcan. Based in Canada, Alcoa offered $27 billion for the aluminum company. And Dell has formed a partnership with Microsoft and Novell to increase compatibility between the Windows and Linux operating systems. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow hit another record, up 48 points. It closed at 13,312. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Laurel Crisson.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Bob.
Yes, indeedy, and not just Here's Bob, but Here's Bob soloing again. Agnes has left the building. Basically, she's going to attend to the boy. They sent Ferg home from the hospital, but they didn't say, you know, gosh, he's all okay. In essence, they said, you know, we don't want to do an emergency appendectomy, but we might do one later. Keep an eye on him, would you? Sometimes, no. And I have found out that we lost the stream back before we went to the news, and I find that, of course, highly frustrating. What I was trying to mention to you at the time was that we lost someone that we have cared much about over the course of the last couple of years. You've heard me reference our good friend David in South Carolina, who has been listening to the program for literally almost as long as it's been on the Internet, right at as long as. And David's young grandson, Jacob, passed away this past weekend. He's 2 years old. The link to the obituary and other information is up at the headonradio.network.com, headonradionetwork.com website, and I hope you will read it. And as I said earlier, but it, you know, I said it only to the microphone here because it didn't make it to the stream, I hope at some point David might feel comfortable enough to talk about some of what he and his family had to go through trying to get adequate and appropriate care for Jacob, because folks need to know this. Folks need to know the kind of outpouring and effort Jacob's family brought to all of this, and to know what kind of roadblocks they faced in attempting to do their very best for this little fella. I never got to meet Jacob, but from this distance, it doesn't matter. I feel a profound amount of love and a profound amount of loss. And it would be unfair for me to mention that the family has gone through a lot, that they are in need of the wherewithal to provide a fitting and final memorial for Jacob. And the information for helping, if you are able to help with a little donation, with some money, is available at the website, and I hope you will avail yourself, because this is profoundly human stuff. I talk about if you can spare a buck here or spare a buck there to help Ben Birch keep what we're doing here on the air, to do so. And I mean no insult to what Ben does. This is bigger even than that. This is the very essence of humanity and how we treat each other as members of the human race. We will remember Jacob, and we will remember his family as they go through this little slice of hell. It's hard to transition to the telephone from that, but we will try just the same. Our good friend Luke is calling from Knoxville, Tennessee. Hey, Luke, welcome to the program.
Evening, Bob.
How are you?
Oh, I tell you, just been a Monday.
I understand.
I almost had the Elvis moment. You know how.
Yeah.
Peanut butter sandwich in one hand, pistol in the other.
Who did it to you?
Just at work. It's a computer problem.
Oh, okay.
I can shoot the one there. They won't let me.
Yeah, I know. They get all antsy about it.
Some strange reason. I can't figure it out. But you know how they are. They're that way. So, this thing now, today, or this weekend, this thing now about the refineries. It's like, isn't this amazing? Just like the same way it happened right after Katrina. My golly, we had to put all these refineries into maintenance mode.
Yeah, all at the same time.
Yeah. You know, it's like, isn't that amazing?
I'm sorry,
of course we don't have any gas. We can't process it.
Would that, I mean, is that some, does that smell like a violation of antitrust to you? Collusion, price fixing at 2 degrees removal?
I say it sounds like somebody's dealing aces out with their toes in at the card game. It's like, guys, it's like, I'm sorry, but you all know when the hot cold season is. So you know you're supposed to know not to do maintenance that part of the year. You know, I mean, I know they've got slack parts of the year when they can do maintenance, but this ain't it.
You know, you don't go fix the plumbing without turning the water off first, and you don't turn the water off when everybody's taking a bath.
Yeah. It's one of those things. They know this is the hot, excuse the term hot, but this is the part of the season where they've got to be doing making all the gas for summer. You know what I mean? It's like, this is not the time you put one into maintenance mode. Not unless, if I say, now at Katrina, you had a couple, like I say, that got hit by tornadoes. Okay, that's reasonable. But why were all the others then put into maintenance mode? It's like, guys, since these are destroyed, why don't we grab these others and say, take them out of maintenance mode? We'll just have to do it later.
Well, Luke, is this a case where Occam's razor applies? The simple answer is it was a cheap way to run a cheap way to make the gas more expensive.
I know. Well, you know, I was sitting here the other night and going through DVDs, and I played one of my favorites in the last couple of years, which is Who Killed the Electric Car?
Mm-hmm.
And I got thinking, imagine what California would be like right now if they hadn't killed the EV1 program. I mean, think of it. 6 years or so down the line, you might have anywhere from 5 to 10% of California's cars as plug-in hybrids.
Yeah, not right.
And imagine how much that would be saving right now.
Yeah, not directly contributing to the emissions load. Indirectly, certainly.
Yeah, but you know what I mean. It's like, say, if people at GM, those geniuses, had not shut it down so they could start up their Hummer line.
That's the part that makes me crazy.
I know.
The EV1 got killed.
And like a month later, they start the Hummer line up, or it was like a month one way or the other.
Yeah.
And it was like, you know, if it walks like a duck, it's quack like a duck. Guess what? I bet it's a duck.
Sure. Know? Exactly.
Oh, I tell you what. I was listening on to Miss Rhodes this afternoon, and she was on this thing with Tennant on the Meet the Press interview.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen a more craven person than George Tennant? I mean, he is really setting the bar pretty low now for that, I tell you. It's like, Russert actually even asked hard questions to him. It was fun to watch.
Well, see, he's opposed to the Bush administration position now, so Russert will ask hard questions.
Well, I was sitting there thinking, you know, whenever they were talking about all this stuff about why he didn't do certain things, and I'm sitting there going, you know, it kind of hit me, those two other little things that nobody mentions about that time, you know, that summer of 2001. You know, isn't it amazing that that's the same time when they told John Ashcroft, quit flying commercial planes?
There is so much stuff out there to remember that we are covered up in the stuff that we are doomed to forget, Luke.
I know. Well, you know, then you had the thing about the G8 convert in Milan. Why do we put George on the carrier? Why isn't he staying in Milan? Well, we've heard they might be thinking about flying planes in the building. Then 2 months later, no one could have imagined anybody would do this.
Except for the fact you were told about it, Madam Rice. Well,
you're the one that came out and told us. Somewhere, one of the news divisions has got to have that tape of whoever came out and made that announcement when they asked, you know, where was the president?
Yeah.
You know, it's sitting somewhere in some vault, but no one wants to play it. But I tell you what, it's one of these things, and now we're having this thing, the one I was looking at while I was waiting on you all. They were talking on Oberman this evening. One of the things they were talking about was this thing. Well, with the Department of Justice, again, the new oxymoron, finding out that the Civil Rights Division has almost no African-American lawyers.
No, and finding out that they were hired based upon their political affiliation.
And amazingly enough, like I say, and then there they are putting lawyers in place just so they could challenge those nice little voters in next year. Well, we're going to, you know.
Well, I love the one story that came out of that from the one guy, the couple of guys who sent in a resume that showed their affiliation with Republican organizations and Republican Party politics. And the guy in charge of the division and the hiring said, hey, Chuckles, come here. Take out all the Republican stuff on your resume, then resubmit it. They did. They were hired.
Well, you saw the thing this week. I think it was this weekend where Mitt went up to talk at Chuckles.
Yeah,
a graduation thing.
Yeah, Draw Spunky University.
Yeah. Draw Bambi on this match cover, and you too.
I drew the pirate. I got a law degree.
Dang, I tell you, that's just unfair, Bob. You know, you got the good one. there was one other, and I'm going to think of it real quick, and I'll put my head. Oh, shoot.
Draw George Bush with a halo, and you can have a medical degree.
Now, our question is tonight: Do we figure he's going to have a Frank Drebin moment?
Would be nice.
Wonder if he's going to set the Queen on fire or something, or you know.
Well, you know, I guess they're sitting down. It's 8:30 Eastern now for you, me, and folks in Washington D.C. I guess they've sat down to dinner, and George ought to be...
More pigs in a blanket?
He ought to be pretty well loaded by now, don't you think?
Oh, gosh.
Did you see the guest list?
No. Who was it? It's got to be some good people.
Well, there's the Coin.
Yeah.
Then there's Elizabeth Hasselbeck from The View.
Oh, gosh.
Henry Kissinger.
Oh.
I guess they'll be saying that he's drinking only tomato juice tonight. We all know it's blood. Colin Powell.
They got him out of the bunker? My God.
He's having to eat through a muzzle, sort of like Hannibal Lecter. So he can't talk.
Yeah.
David Gregory from NBC.
Yeah, but I don't associate with, I'm not too close to the president.
No. And, from Newsweek, Richard Wolff.
Okay.
Let's see, there's more. I'm saving one last one because it's going to send you screaming into the night.
El Russo?
No. Let's see. Mrs. Deborah Bettner. John Bettner, Minority Leader, United States. Boner. What am I saying? Deborah Boner. The Boners.
The Boners. Oh, God.
The Boners are coming to see the Queen.
Oh, God. So much you can do with that. It's just not even funny.
A bunch of exalted mucky mucks. Sir Martin Gilbert, author of Churchill and the Americans.
Oh, one other before I forget, because I know it's time you need to go to the news.
No, it's okay. I've got to make you scream first, Luke.
Okay.
Wait, work with me here. Okay.
Okay.
The chairman of the board from the Kohler Company, Trent Lott.
Oh, gosh.
His Excellency Sir David Manning, KCMG, British Ambassador to the United States, and Lady Catherine M. Manning, his esposa. Oh, but wait, there's another Manning on the list.
Oh, no.
That's right. Super Bowl champion, quarterback, Indianapolis Colts, alum of the University of Tennessee, Bush supporter, and donor to Bob Corker, Mr. Peyton Manning and Mrs. Ashley Manning.
Excuse me a moment. Thank you. That felt good. Thank you.
Yeah, Mitch McConnell and Elaine Chao are going to be there. Nancy Reagan.
Senator Chinless?
Yeah. Yeah, if you saw him, if he was in Rocky Horror, you wouldn't scream, where's your neck? Where's your chin? Tony Snow's going to be there. I can't see here on the list whether or not Dana Perineal and her jailbird husband are going to be there. You did hear about that, right?
Oh.
Dana Perineal is, or Perino, I'm sorry. Her husband got busted.
Lucky him.
You know, he was, because he, you know, doesn't give a damn about, you know, these are Bushies, so they don't have to pay attention or anything.
Laws? What laws?
Exactly. He's a British businessman named Peter McMahon. Took their dog Henry for a walk in Lincoln Park. Okay.
This don't sound good.
You're supposed to have your animals on a leash, and a park officer came up to him and issued him a violation notice with a $25 fine for not having his dog on a leash. And McMahon said, why don't you go down and go and chase down some squirrels? So Mr. McMahon is above the law. Mr. McMahon doesn't feel like he needs to pay the fine. So Mr. McMahon ignores it. And he says, I tried for months to pay the fine. Trouble was the ticket didn't give me an address where it should be sent.
Most of those are mail-ins, aren't they?
Well, right. So he comes in from business overseas and goes to pay it in person. They clapped him in irons and put him in jail for a day. You know, and they're, sure, it's an enjoyable little story, you know, Luke. It really, really is. But, of course, the other side of that is that, you know, sure, we go too fast on the highway. Sure. Everybody probably has done it at one point in time or another. And it's not him violent, you know, okay, so I've got my dog out. I'm walking it. I don't have a leash. The officer comes and says, put him on a leash. Okay, I'm sorry. I didn't realize that. Okay, I'll do that. You know, fine. I'll never do this again. But instead, this pig looks at the officer and says, why don't you go chase down some squirrels? What a jackass.
I'm just sitting there going, now this was in Washington, you say?
Yeah, Lincoln Park.
Oh, good. I was so, wish you could have done it in New York. The cops down there are just so much more friendly.
Yeah, I mean, you know, for squirrels, you know, why don't you go chase down some squirrels? Come on,
he
buddy.
Woke up.
Yeah. Yeah, but see, no, he had the right skin color, so he didn't get the Amadou Diallo treatment. But this is just, well.
I know. Hey, before I forget, did you get a chance to view any of the video from the Rocky and Hannity?
Saw a little bit of it. Saw as much as I could stand.
Well, the thing of it was, if you watch it, Rocky sit there and Rocky does those figures and numbers, you know, and tells all this stuff. And during the whole part of Dear Sean, Baby Jesus, report, he doesn't do anything, you know, to any facts. It's just pure attack.
Yeah. Why do you hate America?
You know,
yeah, I mean, he did everything but that.
Well, I mean, you know, you should be impeached. You know, you should be thrown out of office. Like, wait a minute, you're there arguing why Bush shouldn't be impeached. Of course, he barely mentioned Bush's name.
But well,
during most of it.
Yeah, you see, though.
He whose name shall not be mentioned, you know?
Sean Hannity can't win, Luke, without a dump button.
I know. It's one of those things. I sent that thing a couple of weeks ago. I said, please, C-SPAN, please come cover this. Because, you know what I mean? It was just local TV. You know what I mean? That's who carried it. But it's like,
yeah.
Hey, I wish C-SPAN had carried that. That could have been fun. You know, because like I say, Rocky is just good. You know, I somewhere down the line, please tell me somebody in the Democratic Party is paying attention to this man. You know what I mean? I don't know where he's going to go because I think he's on his last term because he's term limited. But it's like I say, it's one of those things. Please, somebody in the Democratic Party, find him a job because he is too good at it. You know what I mean? He's too good a speaker.
Yeah.
I mean, if you have to move him to Washington, maybe you can get him to be one of the people they'll put on TV on funny shows. Because, I mean, he'll tear him apart.
Well, I don't know. I don't know where, you know, he's a former lawyer. Rocky Anderson's a former lawyer for the ACLU. I don't know where he will go from here after being mayor of Salt Lake City. I personally hope he will continue. We've got to have strong and intelligent people
like said,
in the political process.
Well, like I said, I'm just hoping the next time Orrin Hatch comes up for re-election, that Rocky's on the other side waving, going, howdy.
Yeah, that would be nice. Governor of Utah would be nice. Or you know, move to a sane state. Sorry, but, you know.
Well, I understand. Well, I mean, you know, at least one thing, at least there you can't say you weren't expecting it.
Right.
Look, I'm sorry, that comes with a deed. You're in a crazy place. I understand this.
Well, he's in a place where underwear determines whether or not one gets into heaven.
Yes, I know. I still think, you know, somewhere down the... Oh, I hope the Democratic Party has lined up a whole lot of people with dolphin suits. Follow Romney around.
Now, see, I want to be more creative, Luke. I don't want to... I don't,
that's just the backup.
I know. I don't want to use their dolphin.
We use the waffle iron?
I want a waffle. I want a big, round, squishy, fully indented...
We have one on each side. You want
I want a guy in a waffle suit. I want it to look like one of those beautiful little round bits of crispy
like
goodness from the Waffle House.
Like in one of those Eggo costume things.
Yeah. Exactly.
Well, like I say, I just hope, you know...
But the thing is, we need an army of waffle suits because there's Giuliani's a waffler. The Romney's a waffler. McCain is a waffler extraordinaire. That's three we need.
Well, you've seen two, three people now. You saw, you heard Bill Barr the other night. He went after Giuliani. You know, Oberman has a couple of times. Oh, you saw the thing about
the Giuliani campaign is, Oberman. You know, they're just appalled that Oberman was allowed to be on television. Why isn't he in Guantanamo?
It's like, well, let's see. Now, who does the other side put on their? It's like, look here, we had Scarborough there. I mean, that's balanced, fair and balanced.
Yeah, boy. And the thing is, Oberman is much better talent-wise, much better execution-wise, much better journalism-wise than Joe Scarborough will ever be.
Well, you know what the shameful thing is after watching that last week? I got to move Scarborough ahead of Chris Matthews. God, that was the most pathetic performance I think I've ever seen.
Oh, he's just awful. I
was just sitting there going, what medication is he on?
Well, I figured out finally why they had the other guy walking around on stage, because otherwise, if they had Chris walking around, you'd see the knee pads.
Oh. But, I mean, some of those questions, you're just sitting there going, did the RNC give you these cards?
What is that? Would it be a good thing to have Bill Clinton back in the White House? What the hell was that?
Well, that was the perfect setup for everybody to attack Hillary. I mean, that's all that was. That was, it's like, Chris, welcome to softball. Here you go.
Yeah, or something else ball. Sorry. Trying to keep it clean.
Well, I understand. You know how it is. This is one of those things.
I know. Hey, Luke, I got to roll on, brother.
I know you got others. Have a good evening.
Take care now.
Hi.
Bye. I wanted to make sure that I did not end this show. You know, I told you at the beginning that I had two candidates for outrage of the day. And somehow, Sung-Wee Cho, being demon-possessed, won the coin toss. And maybe that's because I've been living with this other one for a little bit longer, and somehow it's worn off a little bit. I'd like to think that's not the case. Because this is something that happened a week ago. I know. I do. I sit on stories sometimes until I see them develop their own sort of natural connections. This is not a case of that, however. This is not my fault. This is CBS's fault. This is NBC's fault. This is ABC's fault. Disney's. This is CNBC, MSNBC. Did Olbermann have this? I don't know. I'd like to hope maybe he did and I just missed it. This is CNN's, Headline News's, Bloomberg's, every media outlet. This is print media's fault. Because the words in print are as odious as they are in living audio. It was last Tuesday, it was the first day of May 2007, the House Foreign Affairs Subcommittee was holding a hearing on the Bush administration practice of what the Bush administration lovingly and sort of overly marshmallowed-ized calls extraordinary rendition. Now, you know, and I know, because we're liberals, we're progressive, we're intelligent, and we're paying attention. We know that to extraordinarily render somebody means to kidnap them in the middle of the night or whenever, kidnap them, knock them out, and fly them to some god-awful hole and torture them for a while until they say what you want them to say. We also know that numerous people have been extraordinarily rendered. Oh, what's the name I'm trying to think about? Dadgummit. He was a Canadian. He stopped over in the United States, wasn't coming in, and was extraordinarily rendered to Syria and tortured for a year. By mistake. Wrong guy. Well, there is a freak. Well, there's a lot of freaks. There's this particular Republican freak in the House of Representatives from some Southern California county by the name of Dana Rohrabacher. I'm sure you've seen him at one time or another. He's one of these real screamers. You know, commies under the bed, that kind of thing. Before in the interim after the election and before he was installed in Congress, back during the bad old Reagan days, he took a trip and hiked into Afghanistan to fight side by side with the freedom fighters of the Mujahideen. For all we know, he sat down and had a cup of hot, thick coffee or tea with Osama bin Laden back then, because back then Osama was one of ours. So Rohrabacher, in the face of all of this damning testimony from a panel of European parliamentary experts who testified that rendition makes it harder to get a prosecution of a terrorist, Rohrabacher doesn't really ask questions so much as he pontificates. I'll let you hear it before we get to the good part. He sits there and lectures these experts who know more about this issue than poor Dana Rohrabacher will ever know, because he's an idiot and a Republican and a right-wing one, Christian fundamentalist one, that to boot. So, get your anti-vomiting medication out and prepare to be lectured as of a week ago. And it hasn't made any noise, this. As it happened a week ago at the House Foreign Affairs Subcommittee, I give you California Republican Dana Rohrabacher.
After 9/11, we established different operations because we needed to do it, because we knew at that time there were people who were willing to kill tens of thousands of other human beings because they hate our way of life. Now,
stupid liar. They do not hate our way of life. They don't hate our mortgages. They don't hate our cars. They hate what you and your Republican cronies have done to them and their families. But, you see where we're headed.
We're only talking about the question at hand. We've looked at your report. We're talking about a minuscule number of people here, as compared to the number of people who are being protected.
Wow. Hey, you remember that phrase from the year 2000, fuzzy math? There's some fuzzy math. That math is so doggone fuzzy it belongs under somebody's bed. It's dust bunny math is what it is. It's a minuscule number of people compared to the number of people being protected. Well, you jerk, Rohrabacher, first you're going to have to prove to me that what you're doing actually does protect people. Did it protect people when you were you and your Republican cronies were having the Canadian gentleman who was utterly innocent tortured? Did that protect anybody? No, it didn't, you liar.
And does that mean, and of the minuscule number of people, 100, 200 people were being held in this way, how many of those have been mistreated? How many of those have actually suffered the type of unfair treatment because they themselves really aren't members of Al-Qaeda and their name was mistaken? For example, I know in one or two cases you have a man whose name was exactly the same name as a Muslim that was involved in Al-Qaeda. To the degree there are a few of those cases, we should do our best to make sure those cases don't exist, try to find a system to root them out.
Ah, ha, 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 ha. Make sure those cases don't exist. How would you make them not exist, Dana? You slime. How would you make them not exist? Well, you'd make them not exist by making sure that the information never got out. Right? Because you're still upset that we know that your boy George is wiretapping anybody he wants to. The numbers are out. The numbers of warranted wiretaps that the feds sought in the last year is up monstrously. And those are the ones where they sought warrants, mind you. We're not talking about the illegal wiretapping that is going on even as you and I speak. So the way we solve this problem, according to Congressman Rohrabacher, is we keep people from finding out about it.
But, here's the other shoe dropping, we are at war, and we've got to make sure that we do not let go 50 terrorists who will go out and plant a bomb in London and kill 20,000 people.
We are at war. Congressman, I'd say with all due respect, but you're not due any respect. Congressman, who the hell are we at war with? I'm not going to froth at the mouth or slobber or spit. I just want to know who we're at war with. Are we at war with Iraq? Did I miss out on a congressional declaration of war somewhere along the way? Was I too busy watching the Food Network and missed it when you guys declared war on the people of Iraq? Are we at war with Iran? Are we at war with Afghanistan? Who are we at war with? We're at war with the terrorists. Oh, I'm sorry. Sovereign nations only go to war with other sovereign nations. This isn't a war, you freak. God, I hate these people. I just loathe them. But we haven't gotten to the good part. Oh, no, 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 no. We're not to the part that really makes you just the claw at the walls and scream. No, we're just getting there.
In order to protect that one person who we arrested accidentally because his name was the same. That's the type of unfortunate consequence. Well, I hope it's...
Wait. Did you hear that? Back up. You got to pay attention. There's some groaning when he brings up this stupid right-wing Republican talking point that went out of fashion about, you know, the time of, you know, Mao.
...who we arrested accidentally because his name was the same. That's the type of unfortunate consequence.
Oh.
Well, I hope...
Okay, so you heard the groaning. It's an unfortunate consequence. Oh! Now, how does he respond to that groan? This is it, folks. I mean, I've heard some low garbage, some really low, slimy filth just ooze out of the mouths of Republicans from time to time. But, baby, I think this may be the lowest.
Consequence. Well, I hope it's your families. I hope it's your families that suffer the consequences.
Got that? Got that? I hope it's your families that suffer the consequences. Now, bear in mind, that was not a hearing room full of Iraqis. That wasn't a hearing room full of Osama's family. It wasn't a hearing room full of Al-Qaeda. That was a hearing room full of American citizens. I don't know what I would do if I was doing this story on terrestrial radio. Excuse me. Because I don't know what words you use to describe a person who considers himself an elected representative of all the people in his district, who wishes upon some of the people in his district a horrible, grisly death in a terrorist attack. And frankly, to refer to him in the gutter parlance to which he is rightly deserving is beneath me. I got so mad about this. I mean, there's nothing he can do about it, but I did shoot off a letter to my congressman about it, asking that this freak, this demon, be censured by the House for this. Dana Rohrabacher, on the first day of May, 2007, wished another 9/11 on the United States of America. He did. Hear it again.
Oh, I hope it's your families. I hope it's your families that suffer the consequences.
I hope it's your families. I hope it's your families that suffer the consequences. Dana Rohrabacher has officially forfeited any right he may have had to the decent opinion of right-thinking people in this nation. Because I suppose this is the benchmark standard now, What Rush Limbaugh, Rush, him too. No, what Don Imus said was reprehensible and racist and bigoted and filthy and ugly. This is about a million times worse. After sitting there for a minute and 34 seconds prating on about the necessity to protect the, you know, we've got to balance this against the number of people being protected, he comes out, the rubber mask comes off, the curtain gets pulled aside, and we find out, by God, where he really lies. Lays. Grammar moment. We find out once and for all that Dana Rohrabacher thinks there are only one set of Americans, and they are the people who vote the way he wants them to vote. They are the people who torture. They are the people who wiretap. They are the people who assault habeas corpus. They are the people who attack small nations that are defenseless and have done nothing to us. Those are the only people entitled to protection in this country.
Consequence. Well, I hope it's your families. I hope it's your families that suffer the consequences.
Why has this man not been removed from office already? Why has he not been hounded out of office? Jesus, do you remember? Lord God, do you remember when Dick Durbin stood up and showed what was going on at Guantanamo and said, if you didn't know these were American soldiers, you would think it was the Russians or the Nazis doing it. And Limbaugh and Hannity and O'Reilly and Beck and the whole filthy crowd, Savage and on, and all the little wannabes at little 5,000-watt, 4,500-watt daytime stations across the nation screamed and said, Dick Durbin, you apologize, you've insulted the troops. John Kerry screwed up a joke and said, you know, if you don't go to school, you wind up in Iraq. If you don't make good grades, you wind up in Iraq. Pointing at the fact that George Bush is a moron. And there was a firestorm, and the American Family Association said, sign our petition demanding that John Kerry apologize to our troops. Are we just ineffective? Are we ineffectual? Or are we not paying attention? Or is it not our fault and it's the media's? That's the question that has to be answered at the end of the day, because you know what? Where is the outcry? I'm going to hang on to this audio. We're not going to listen to the rest of the crap. We may have to play it once a day. Every single member of Congress should be written about that comment. I hope it happens to you. I hope you suffer the consequences. We need to write our TV stations, our radio stations. We need to write our newspapers. And most of all, we need to find out from the... This is one of those times when it could... If you live in a district with a Republican congressional representative, this is one of those times it's going to be fun. Because you need to put that quote right in front of your stinking, filthy Republican member of Congress, and you say, either you disavow this or you uphold this. Where do you stand when it comes to wishing a terrorist attack on the people of the United States? Where do you stand, Republican Congress critter? Where do you stand when it comes to wishing another 9/11 on New York? Another 9/11 on Washington? A brand new 9/11 on Chicago or L.A. or Seattle or Phoenix or Houston or Dallas or St. Louis or Nashville, Mobile... Oh, sorry, New Orleans already had theirs. Where do you stand? Because you know what? If you don't do it, nobody will. And that is just the simple fact. If you don't do it, nobody will. Because they haven't so far. So I suppose it remains to be seen. It ain't like I'm giving orders or anything. That's it for tonight. Agnes produced most of the program. I finished up. We may be off to the hospital again. The little guy's not feeling well. Many thanks to John Fox for engineering, to Peter Godbold for his IT technical consulting. Many, many thanks to Ben Birch, who prepared all the reruns and everything for today while Ferg was at the hospital. Ben Birch is the hardest working man in liberal talk. It's not a joke. Our thanks to the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights, who are building the American dream and helping us get started in saving the American dream. Best not be coming to visit, Liza. It might not be appendicitis, it might be a virus, and we don't need you getting sick. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you. You're listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network.
Cindy Sheehan with the Camp Casey Peace Institute leads the Mother of All Marches on day after Mother's Day, Monday, May 14th. Deputy National Security Advisor resigns. Waxman cautions Rice for hindering Iraq intelligence investigation. Number three Republican in the House wants Gonzalez out. Report finds Rove coached justice staff before key hearing. Did former White House counsel force U.S. attorney to resign? 08 Republicans differ on defining party's future. Clinton proposes vote to reverse authorizing war. Iran FM attacks U.S. policy in Iraq. Austrian group wants chimpanzee granted basic rights. Mental health care failing at risk troops. Beating global warming needn't cost the earth, the UN says. Scottish nationalists defeat Blair's party. U.S. and Iran meet briefly during summit in Egypt. Honeybee die-off threatens the U.S. food supply. Bush threatens to veto expansion of hate crime law. Rice says talks with Syrian foreign minister is businesslike. Privacy law slows efforts on gun buyer data. These are the issues ahead on the Jeff Allen Wolf Show. It's time to enter the Wolf's Den, starting now.